afternoon, I'll call to order the meeting of the Conference Committee on Senate File 3134. That is the State Government Omnibus Policy Committee. We'll start with some introductions here. I'll start with the Senate side. I'm Don Betzold, and for the Senators, I usually try to identify who our House members are from our respective districts so that that helps out our members and our counterparts in the House know who we are. So my House members are Tim Sanders and Tom Tilbury.
I'm Tom Bodder, Senate Counsel for the State Government Budget Division.
I'm Kevin Lundeen, Senate Fiscal Staff.
I'm Gary Cooper, Senate District 20, straight west of here, about 130-some miles. My House members are Representative Coonan and Representative Falk.
I'm Claire Robley, and I represent the majority of Scott County. And my House members are Representative Beard and Biscuits.
Rick Olsen, Senate District 17, which is Chisago and most of Isani County. And I've evidently done something to my House members because they're both quitting this year, of Glenn Kalin and in Eastland. So I guess I'm hard to get along with.
Okay. Phyllis Kahn, 59B in Minneapolis, and my senator is Senator Pogamiller.
Mark Shepard from the House Research Department.
Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff.
I'm Representative Jeremy Keelan from District 17B, and the list is very long of House Senator Olsen has pushed us out, so we don't have time today. We'll get to it Tuesday.
Steve Simon, 44A, St. Louis Park and Hopkins. Ron Latz is my senator.
We have a, what I'd like to do is just identify the identical provisions, if we could get those out of the way first. There are a number of provisions. The Senate actually passed the bill a couple of weeks ago, and there were provisions within the Senate bill that were other bills that have already been enacted. Well, obviously, we don't need to address those at all here. We will identify them to the extent that we need to, but we surely don't need to act on them. As I'm going down the list that I guess Mr. Shepard prepared and Mr. Bodden worked on with too, the first identical one that I see is on page R5. That's agency receipts, and that's just raising the amount of cash on hand that these agencies could need to hold on to. I said Senator Roebling carried this in the Senate, but it's identical in both bodies, so I think that it would be appropriate to possibly incorporate this in the omnibus bill.
Okay, so moved.
Representative Kahn moves to adopt Section 5 of the Senate language. Discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, prevails. The next identical one that I see is the combined charity on R11 and R12, and that's just a clarification of where the deposits are to be made. Let's see, that's look at R11. Is that
Section 10 in the Senate?
Section 10. Okay, Section 10. And is it only Section 10?
Yes.
I believe that's it. Yeah, Section 10 of the Senate language. So Representative Kahn moves Section 10 of the Senate language. Discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The provision is adopted. Then declaration of trust and non-resident fee for agent. These were provisions that were from the Secretary of State's office. It's on R17 and R18, and that's identical in both bodies. It's, what is it, Section 12 and 13, it appears to be.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Broder,
yeah. Mr. Shepard is about to point this out. These sections were included in the amendments that the House made to Senate File. I'm forgetting the
26.
It was a bill just the Senate recently. Oh. I think a few minutes ago concurred in the amendments.
Okay,
to that.
So we don't need to act on this. It's already passed.
I think it's Senate File 2629. Just to clarify, yes.
So we don't actually need to adopt anything here if it's been passed,
it's been passed.
Both bodies.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll skip that one over then. We don't need to do anything here. I think those are the only identical things. We do have a similar provision on page R3 on the Council of Black Minnesotans. The language, I believe, is quite similar, except that the House has some language allows the Council to accept payment for advertising and some reporting requirements. Perhaps maybe it's slightly different. I think we're certainly interested in that, but could somebody from the House just basically explain that difference here?
I think these were both things that were that were asked for. The House kind of wants reporting on anything that's you know, that's sort of that's happening outside, and I guess that maybe after the Senate had considered it, was brought to our attention that that they also needed the authority to accept payments for advertising. This is mainly, I think, for Martin Luther King Day, big celebration at that time. I guess they've been doing all of this for about 15 or 20 years, and a legislative auditor suddenly said they had no authorization to do it. So
that's my understanding. It's a long-standing practice. They've been doing it, and we just have to basically give them the authority to do what they've been doing for 15 years and require a report.
So I think there shouldn't be any objection to the House language, and I'll move the House language.
Representative moves the House language on the Council of Black Minnesotans on page R3. Let's see, this is would be actually House Section 4 that we'd be adopting. Is that correct?
Okay.
Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. That provision is adopted. As I'm looking down the list, I think the only other thing that I could see that's close to identical might be the webmaster provision and the data. We have identical provisions on enhanced access to data, but there's a difference between the Senate dropped the webmaster provision, and on the transparency standards, the House refers to standards, the Senate refers to policy on that. Otherwise, you know, we have some similarities and some differences on that point. So perhaps we could discuss. I happen to be the chief author of that bill in the Senate. So, as I said, we have two differences here. Let's talk about the webmaster, first of all. The Senate dropped that provision simply because of fiscal note.
We dealt with that by making it optional and also making it clear that all of this web activity could be charged when they're doing it, could be charged against agencies the way we usually do with the interagency objections for OET and various departments.
And I guess the question, since this was the House language, perhaps,
and so
maybe Ms. Roberts, was there any cost to this that you recall after this language was changed?
Mr. Chair, and OET may want to speak to this also. I think that making the webmaster provision permissive, I believe, addressed our concerns about that part. As far as the standards...
Well, we won't get there quite yet. I want to let's focus on... Maybe OET could, if they want to come forward and just talk about the House language, as they say, we deleted it from the Senate language because of the fiscal note, and we've got some optional matters in the House language. I don't know if it's going to work or not. Could you please identify yourself for the conference committee?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Michael Meilenberg, representing the Office of Enterprise Technology. The webmaster section in the House bill, as Representative Kahn had indicated, was made permissive on their side, meaning that OET would not be required to implement the section. If we so chose, we could implement the section. Since the section is now permissive, we've testified that we believe that the cost would go away. It probably would not be implemented right away given current constraints on funding, but the language would be in statute, and we would have the option to exercise its authority in the future if there was funding available.
So you've got no objections to the language on the webmaster as it is in the House language?
That's correct.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Meilenberg? Then let's get to the other issue that's here, and that is the difference between standards and policy. Standards was the language was in the original bill. In the Senate, we changed the policy because apparently that word standards has some meanings in some of the big corporations, particularly Microsoft, and so forth. So we just wanted to
be cautious about how we proceeded in here, but Reverend Kahn, what are your thoughts?
Well, the librarians were very interested in keeping the word standards in. So I was thinking maybe there was some way to combine them, which is like saying, shall develop a policy for standards to enhance public access. So we're obviously discussing it, but we still have the concept of standards in there.
Is there anybody here who can testify on this issue of standards versus policy or some combination here? I know that there've been people around here on it. Come on forward. Welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
The Secretary of State.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the conference committee. For the record, my name is Dan Larson with Lockridge Grindle Nowen, testifying on behalf of Microsoft Corporation. Without diving deeply into the issue on behalf of Microsoft, we would just testify that we prefer the approach to public policy that's in the Senate bill and prefer the Senate language and believe that from their perspective, at times the discussion around standards can be far much further reaching in terms of its meanings beyond, I think, what's trying to be accomplished in the legislation. Let me first say that, or also say that I think Microsoft is strongly supportive of the your efforts and desires in the original legislation, and just had some concerns around the reference to standards.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Larson, what about the suggestion that I've just made, that we incorporate both languages and say we'll do a policy for standards to enhance public access? So that we're not developing the standards, we're developing a policy, but part of that development will include a discussion of the concept of standards. Would that be something that could be acceptable?
Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn. It's not something I could respond in terms of the ability of Microsoft to say whether or not that would be supportive or not. It's certainly something I could try to relay back quickly and try to work with you on, but wouldn't be able to at this time be able to state a position on their behalf.
So, I don't know the schedule for tonight, but the House is going back in at 7. We don't know what that means, but would you be able to have a response in within the hour, do you think?
I would certainly try my very best, Mr. Chair. I'm not necessarily optimistic about that.
I understand Saturday afternoon. Well, right. I can set it aside for a little while, and if you can let us know, we can find out. So,
and thank you,
Representative. And as part of your conversation, Mr. Larson, I think also incorporate the idea of changing the language so that we're not saying that the policy would be the standards, but making sure that the standards will be part of the discussion of the policy. So I think it is putting off problems that Microsoft would have until, as part of the discussion of this issue, as opposed to using that word.
Thank you. I'll relay that. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's just set that issue aside for a moment. As I'm looking at what's left of the Senate provisions, and we'll start considering the House positions, the first part of the folding of the flags has already been enacted, the Ag Vets Bill, we don't need to deal with that. If you look down the side-by-side on R6, disposal of buildings, certain buildings, outhouses, that's already been passed in a separate bill, so I don't think...
Which one was that, Mr. Chairman?
That was, if you look at the side-by-side, it's on page R6. Senator Roebling had that bill, and it's already passed.
Representative Kalin.
Yeah, Senate File 3318. So that one we don't need to deal with because that's been done. If you look at, we all talked about the Declaration of Trust and Non-Resident Fee, the assisted voting grants and optical scan, the Senate just actually concurred with the House members within the past hour on that bill.
And where is that again?
Well, if you look in the last page, R19, 2021, that was Senate File 2629.
in the Senate was Senator Sieben's bill, which also, I believe, is, that was the HAVA repealer part of that, too. I believe that was part of that, too. So almost everything that was left, I think, in the... There's two issues then that are left, I think, that the Senate would call to your attention. Three. First of all, starting at the bottom of the summary page, the procedures under which two or more contiguous counties may propose a whole rule charter commission. Senator Clark had that. It was heard in committees, but I believe the House did not. It was introduced right before deadline, so I don't think the House ever had a chance to look at that. That was amended into House File 2227. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on it. If it's active in some of the conference committee, it's there. But the House never really looked at the issue, so I don't know if they...
Conference committee?
The last one on the side-by-side, R25 to 28. Senator Clark had a bill under which two or more contiguous counties may propose a home rule charter commission. This is the fact that there are three counties in the St. Cloud area that all come together in St. Cloud, and they wanted to have a charter commission that had involved two or more contiguous counties so that they could have a charter for one city that was in three different counties. And it was mainly for St. Cloud. Senator Clark had that bill that was heard in State and Local Government Operations Committee, but the companion bill was introduced on March 9th in the House, and so they never got a chance to hear the bill. So the bills were not moving in the same way in each body. When we've got that Board of Innovation bill that Senator Metzen is carrying in the Senate, and it had a number of things amended to it, that amendment was also put on that bill as well. So I'm not sure whether we should be dealing with this committee, this conference committee, or just let the other conference committee deal with that. Senator Rest.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would find out from her, but House File 2227, I think, is going to have some controversial provisions in it that I don't think this one is.
Okay.
We can find out from Senator Clark, if
sure.
you don't mind, if it's not controversial, and this bill has it might be signed.
Okay.
I think we might want to keep it in here, and Ms. Schaefer-Pellin is going to find out for us.
Okay. And similarly, if you look at the second from the last item, there was a commission on service innovation, which I believe has now passed both bodies, but it is in a separate conference committee. So, but Senator
Same
Bonoff,
thing. Well, this is one.
Yeah.
Senator Bonoff would like it in this bill.
This is a problem, I think, where Senator Bonoff's bill is not the companion to Senator Markowitz's bill.
Right.
But that's Senator
In conference.
What?
They have matched in conference.
Okay, so they're both in conference together now. Oh,
yes.
Okay. And what we had was we put in our bill a paragraph, in a sense, mm-hmm. from the Bonoff bill, the summary. That's that one line. It's clearly that's, I prefer to have, since the Markowitz bill was originally in this bill, too, but we took it out. And so I guess it's something else we should ask them what they're doing, but I think it makes much more sense to have that conference.
Madam Chair, I thought to start with, the Bonoff bill's companion was Representative Downey and not Representative Markowitz. So I don't know where they matched up, but I do know that in the tax bill, we have adopted a Markowitz, we've adopted a Markowitz provision, and I think it's that group. You don't think so?
Well, what I understand is that they've now, by this mystical process that people at the front desk do, the Bonoff bill is being conferred along with the Markowitz bill. They've been matched together as a conference committee.
In whose bill?
It was Senator Metzen's bill on the Board of Innovation. And they lobbed all these things together. I think Senator Bonhoff, yeah,
Mr. Chairman and members, House File 2227, the Senate companion had died in committee. When the House file came over, it was laid on the table and then special ordered yesterday, and these amendments were placed on it, including the provisions in the Bonak bill.
I think there's a desire, at least...
To have one.
Well, to have... I think Senator Bonak and possibly Senator Clark would rather have their provisions in this bill than the other one, and
that's
I think
correct.
We can just have that checked out. And we'll just have to see what the House's desire is on that as well, too.
But...
I'll represent Con.
Okay. My desire is... I do think it's a much more subject... should be much more subject for discussion in that conference committee, which have the people who have worked on those bills. But I think we should see if there's something that they can come to agreement with instead of just putting the Bonoff positions
right.
in this bill, which would be preempting. And we took the Marquardt positions out of this bill, which, you know, would have been more appropriate. The Marquardt, if we had left the Marquardt provisions in, then it would be appropriate to conference it here. But I'm more comfortable trying to hear if that conference committee is coming to any agreement than just leaving the Bonoff positions in this bill.
Sure.
We put the part of the Bonoff bill, you know, we just put one paragraph. We have just this one paragraph as the governor to appoint the Commission on Service Innovation. And if that paragraph, if the decision is that the Marquardt bill is not going to move at all, and that the Bonoff bill is the only thing, I would be more comfortable, instead of putting the whole Bonoff bill in, expanding that paragraph on the governor's appointment.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair,
I
think whatever agreed on language that is conferred on the Bonoff proposal, whoever is the matchup in the House, has more success in this bill of being signed. It's my understanding that the, and I may be wrong, but the bill that is now the base bill in that has these provisions in it, that is the Board of Innovation language, is not something favored by the governor.
The problem is, the question is, how not favored by the governor is it? Is it not favored by the governor enough to bring this bill down, too? So,
no.
That's...
It's not the service on Commission on Service Innovation that is the issue. It's the Board on Innovation language that's the issue.
I'm just trying to lay it out here.
Well, we've got a little bit of time here. We'll hold these, and I think
Senator Bonoff has left the building for a while.
And Senator Clark, I believe, might be involved in the discussion with the governor's office. I'm not sure. So we've got time to Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other piece that we'll want to chase after before the robust discussion on this item is how this matches up with the bill that was carried by Representative Swales and McFarlane that is now law. That focuses on local governments, but has a different membership, and so they will want to check on that piece to see what's covered and what's not. Because I believe there may have been some sort of tension between the Bonoff proposal and the Swales McFarlane proposal.
Well, as I say, we'll hold on to this for the moment and figure out from the authors what they desire in both bodies and work from there. The only other Senate position was going back to the. If you look on the front page of it, towards the bottom, page R7, contracts over $100,000. This was a separate bill that Senator Pogamiller was carrying, and this was tagged onto that bill. And the bill was dealing was a merger of Deed and Dolly, Department of Labor and Industry, and he added a provision there on requiring estimates of cost by an agency forbidding basically outsourcing unless certain criteria has been met. And he had that as a separate article that was removed from his bill and amended on the Senate floor by a rather close vote, by the way, onto this bill. And I'm not sure if there's any, there's no comparable provision in the House. I'm not sure if there's been much discussion in the House, but this is as I say, it was an amendment that was put on the Senate language here, so. So, we can hold on to this, but I'm just flagging the items right now that are Senate-only positions in this bill that, and next we'll turn to the House-only positions, of course. So, But did you have any questions on that last one, the contracting part, or any issues you want to raise on that before we move on to the house-only positions?
Well, again, is that a position that gets a lot of negatives from the administration?
That I don't know. I have not been involved with the issue other than the fact it was tagged onto my bill, and I don't know whether... Senator Robling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know it is quite controversial, and we probably heard more controversy about it after it was passed and certain groups started to realize what it said. I got a number of emails from, like, architects and engineers who were concerned about how it was being proposed, and it is quite controversial, I think, and the governor may hear from some of those same people.
We've got Representative Admin and here and some of the agencies. Welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for record.
Happy Saturday. Jim Rose, Department of Administration. I have Lenora Madigan, who is our financial person for Department of Administration. Not talking about the policy, but there's a cost factor, and Lenora, was a fiscal number, and she can probably address it better that way.
Welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Lenora Madigan, Department of Administration. Administration pulled together a fiscal note based on the number of professional technical contracts that are awarded in excess of $100,000. And on average, that's about $450 a year. And so I understand the Department of Transportation has been doing some of this already. And so we excluded those costs from the calculation. And based on the average cost they experience, it would be an increase of $765,000 to state agencies and the Department of Administration. Roughly 401 of that 1,000 is the Department of Administration, and 365,000 would be spread across other state agencies.
Do you have a copy of that fiscal note? Maybe we could have a copy made and
present
to the conference. That would help us, I think.
Okay. So.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll have somebody copy it, and we'll present the conference later. Any questions of the witnesses on that issue? I see Senator Bonhoff. I see you're here. What did you? We have just a minute ago had talked about the issue on the Commission on Service Innovation. And who was the House author on this one, do you recall?
Mr. Chair, it was Keith Downey.
Okay. And as it's being discussed in a different conference committee on House File 2227, it's also in this bill. And there's differences between what's in the House language in this bill as opposed to what's in the Senate bill. So I wonder if Representative Downey's around, if we could get a discussion between the two of you and the
Mr. Chair.
What's going on?
Mr. Chair, I did speak to Representative Downey. Representative Downey prefers the language in our bill, the
Senate version.
The Senate version. That was the original language that was in both of our bills. Because Representative Downey didn't have a chance to have his bill heard separately in a policy committee, it was just a few sentences were kind of a placeholder in the omnibus bill that you see. But Representative Downey prefers the Senate version. I spoke to him right before this meeting.
Sarah.
So we should copy that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sarah Rust.
And Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair, the issue with that you had brought up about the Marquardt bill, as I had indicated, this Council on Local Results and Innovation has already been adopted in the Tax Conference Committee.
It's different from the Marquardt bill that we're talking about.
Okay.
I thought it might have been part of the Marquardt bill that I hadn't paid attention to, but that's different. There are more people who are putting things in with the word innovation in it this year than ever before. But that's totally different. That only deals with local governments as opposed to...
Senator Bonhoff's bill is quite different from this one, certainly.
Yeah.
So
that's not...
Right. So Representative Marquardt had more than one bill on these things?
So, Mr. Chairman, so... Does anyone have any idea of what's happening in that conference committee?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, thank you. We haven't met yet as a conference committee. Apparently, according to the representatives, they're waiting for some direction from House leadership. I don't know why. Originally, when we met, It was supposed to be a concurrence, and there were no issues. I don't know. Apparently, the governor might have some issues with the bill. So that's why I have requested that this continue to travel in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, the point we're at, we're no longer looking at continuing traveling. We're looking at what becomes state law.
Right.
And I think we don't want conflicting things to become state law. So
Madam
we'd like
Chair.
To have what that conference committee, apparently they've both been putting together, and we'd like to have what that conference committee decides to do to put into this bill, as opposed to what half of that conference committee is considering.
Well, it seems to me that if we can reach an agreement on this issue and just adopt it in this bill, then we can perhaps the other conference committee can just be told to jettison that part,
yes.
So we don't have it two different places. And since we're meeting first, maybe we get to choose that, I guess.
That'd be fine.
But then we have to decide, okay, which version of language do we want? Are you saying
Madam Chair, the language that's in the conference committee, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I wasn't sure who was chairing tonight. All right, Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, the language that's in the Marquardt bill that relates to the provision on the Commission on Service Innovation is the same as what's in this bill. There are other provisions in that broader bill that are not in this bill. In addition, there's the county, you know, charter commission, which is in both bills as well.
Representative Kalin.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think Senator Rest said, I don't know if everybody picked it up, when Representative Kahn said, you know, there's so many different bills that use the term innovation and have these kinds of commissions. I think I'm just going to reiterate the point that I made earlier, that the Swales-McFarland bill that they worked with Roger Moe on also, I do think we need to just catalog what's...
Swales-Rest bill.
Oh, it was you who I
oh,
did not
I'm
know
sorry.
The author
yes.
was. Thank
yes.
you. I know the three of you and Roger Moe and others worked very, very closely on that piece of it, too, so I think it would be helpful for us to see all of the different councils and pieces before us, so we have a sense of what is law and what is being proposed, so that we're not doubling over.
So you want to see that?
Well, if you have it,
we'll get your copy. We'll bring copies of that in here so that we have them all side by side.
And just point of personal privilege, while Senator Bonhoff is here, that this is a mini Israel trip reunion, and we have wonderful Representative Leader's slideshow. Actually, Representative Pawlowski has on a mini disc that you can pop into your computer. So we'll make sure to do that before tomorrow night.
Very nice.
And the other alums are Representative Kahn, Chair Kahn, myself, Representative Simon, in addition to Senator Rest and Senator Bonhoff. So thank you for the indulgence.
Was that the one where you were drinking wine? And
yes.
That was Senator Pappas.
We had a caucus meeting, and we had a video from them in Israel, and they were...
No, it was an interactive conference.
And they were drinking wine. Representative Kahn.
But Representative Kahn was not there. We made her wait outside because it was a Senate caucus meeting.
And that means at the conclusion of this conference committee, we'll be able to say next year in Jerusalem. Bit of an in-joke.
So where are we? What are we doing on this article?
Okay. Let me do a suggestion. Yeah. First of all, as I recall, one of the differences which Representative Downey pointed out when we were discussing the Marquardt bill is that the membership was very, very different. The membership of the Marquardt bill was very much government-oriented, and the membership of the Bonhoff-Downey bill was very much more private oriented. So I think one of the things we need to have before us is we need to have, particularly at that conference, you know, we obviously, before we need anything, we need Representative Marquardt here also, but we need to have the parts that are identical, and I don't know if those stand by alone and so forth. You know, we need to have, I guess I would certainly, since it's in this bill, I would certainly have no problem identifying that. I would, though, like an agreement on what I know was the difference was the makeup of the council.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn,
Senator Bonhoff.
There was a difference in the MarCorp provisions in his Board of Innovation than in the Commission on Service Innovation. So the Commission on Service Innovation was amended in its entirety to the MarCorp bill so that we kept our membership intact. When Representative Downey had the bill, the differences were, as ours went through the committee process, we added an extra person from AFSCME. We added a nonprofit because they felt as though they wanted to be named separately, and we added somebody from the Citizens League. But the MarCorp provision does have a different makeup, and that's still in that total bill. And the Commission on Service and Innovation, whose mission is very discreet in time, it's just to do a strategic plan in the next year, and then it's ended, and that has its own membership.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, there are, and I must have heard this three times, so I apologize for being unable to remember it. The MarCorp bill had two separate commissions.
Okay.
It starts blending together, as
actually,
I said.
Actually, great.
Yes.
Great.
So,
what I'll do is I'll set it aside. I think the conference committee would like to hear from both you and Representative MarCorp and to make sure that we've got the right blend here. So, you know, we'll set aside it. If you can locate them and get them back here.
It's in the tax conference committee.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you for having me here. The other thing I just wanted to make sure that people understand is the provision on the charter, county charter, is also in both, and so we haven't discussed that.
There's a representative from Senator Clark's office here, and maybe she may be tied up, but maybe we can get an indication of where this issue is, either in this bill or House File 2227, and get some direction here. So, okay, thank you. Senator Russ.
And, Mr. Chairman, if we do Senator Clark's provision in this bill, I do have an amendment that deals with personnel issues.
Well, first of all, let's figure out which conference committee it belongs in or is happening in before we get too deep into it.
Right.
And then if it's the desire of this conference committee to address it in this bill, then we can start talking about the merits of it and find out if that's something the House is interested in. So we have somebody from the Senator Clark's office. Did you want to add anything? I think she's tied up. Did you want to tell us what's going on with the bill, if you're aware of it?
Go ahead.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Thanks. Charlie Vandereyde with Senator Terrell Clark's office. I believe that Senator Clark would like to proceed in this conference committee if we were able to, and then continue with 2227, Senator Bonoff's bill.
Okay. We'll set the issues aside for the moment and circle back them a little later on. And if Senator Clark is available later on, she may want to address the conference. Who is the House author on this? It wasn't heard in the House, but...
is Representative Larry Oz.
Okay. Yeah, if he's available, he may want to just, you know, join us at the conference committee on this one, too. So. Okay. We'll set it aside for a moment. So, Madam Chair, those are the items for the Senate-only positions, and as I say...
I have some...
Yeah.
I think we're passing out the Swales Rest bill.
Okay. We'll hold on to it and get back to it a little later on when we get more information. Okay, so now let's take a look at some of the house-only provisions.
Okay. I have some which I think are really simple, and they may not have been in the Senate bill just because ours was done later. And I'm glad that Mr. Rhodes is still here. Okay. Okay, one of the ones on the one of the ones that came up is R8, Veterans Preference in State and that this is possibly been done in the revises bill, and I don't know if that's is it done now, so we don't. And years when the revises bill didn't pass.
I think that there was a mistake that was made in the vets bill.
Yeah.
On veterans' preferences, and I think it needs to be corrected. Mr. Rhodes, do you know what the status is?
Members of the committee, have this correction needs to get in, and they are putting it in the legislative corrections bill. However, to be safe, I think it would behoove us to maybe, as a page out of other people's at the table's book, if we want to place it in a few other bills. This is that important because this really should has to get into corrected.
Madam Chair, given the fact that the end of session corrections bill didn't even pass last year, And I don't know if, you know, we're going to get this conference will be done and passed in time, too, but I don't mind putting it in two different places if that accomplishes.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Council position with regard to R8 Veterans Preference and State.
Okay, Section 13 of the House language is being moved. Is there a discussion on that motion? Hearing any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion carries.
Then while Mr. Rhodes is still here, R7, the fleet management, has that been done somewhere else or not?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that language is only in this bill here, and it's something that we're already doing, so it's up to you if you want to put it in or not.
Do you need it?
Which one?
You're doing it already?
This was Representative Downey's put this into Representative Kahn's bill.
Mr. Chair?
Same.
It seems to me we did some stuff with mileage and all those kinds of things that right. State vehicles, so I am wondering whether or not this is needed or not. I guess I'd come down on the side, Mr. Chair, that we probably don't need it.
Well, is it needed from Mr. Rhodes or not? I forgot why we put it.
Lenora,
I mean, it's not like the Council on Black Minnesotans where someone said they needed authority.
Members, I can tell you that we are doing it. If you want to put it in there, fine. This on the fleet, Lenora. But if you don't want it, it's just I would say it's up to you what your comfort level is.
There are things, Lenora Madigan, Department of Administration, there are already things that the Fleet Management Division is already doing in coordination with the Fleet Council. So they obviously met with Representative Downey and are working on these items.
And you think we do not need this language?
That is my understanding, yes.
Fine.
Okay, so we'll kind of pass on that. And thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
And there's another one which I think is really, it's unfortunately one of the things that I'm the only person who works on, are 14, 17, and 18. This is OET and MNGO data standards regards requiring various state entities to use OET and MNGO standards. Let me look at exactly what all of those are. On some of them, on R14. The two on R14, the Section 18 and Section 19, that is totally technical, and it really just check this out with one of the first things is, if you remember, we changed the Land Management Information System to the Minnesota Geospatial Information Office, and so we didn't clean up the language in every place. And then the other one is also, it's the same thing. Mr. David Arbeit is also in the Department of Administration, came and
this is all technical. 18 and 19.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Yes, if you recall, if we changed over last year to MGIO and David Arbeit, this is just technical cleanup language. He's planning next year to do other stuff, which would be a little different, but this is just technical stuff.
So how many sections is it?
Page R14 is sections 18 and 19.
And also 25 and 20, right. Sections 25 and 28, too.
Okay, those are other issues, right?
No.
Oh, the same thing. Technical 20.
Would you say the sections again? I
sure.
Well,
sections 18, 19, 25, and 28. Mark, you tell us what pages they are.
Well, it's
20 what?
14 or 14 or 17 or 18. So
yes.
Mr. Rhodes, were all those sections technical then? We looked at 18 and 19. I'm trying to look at sections 25 and 28 of the House language.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Connick, this is I believe this is what David Arbeit actually gave to you to put in the bill from the MGIO stuff. So my understanding is it is just technical stuff. If it's from what he had given you, that should be it then.
Okay, give us a second here, just to read one. You see any issues? I'm trying to absorb it myself. Okay, any questions? Representative Khan moves House language section 18, 19, 25, and 28. It appears that this is technical language dealing with the GIO data standards. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. What other things do you have?
There's another one, it's R22 in the side-by-side report.
OET cost recovery?
OET cost, you know, OET's budget is almost totally based on the recovery. For example, like if they're doing some of the web coordination and something like that, it's almost always based on recovery. And so this would, with interagency agreements, and this would just make sure that everything that's done in this bill would cover that.
So OET can bill the executive branch agencies for any increase of costs the office incurs in implementing amendments to Minnesota statutes 16E. Okay, OET, is somebody here, and can you explain what this is about? And apparently this is tied into the webmaster issue. Mr. Meilenberg, welcome to the conference committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, my name is Michael Meilenberg, representing the Office of Enterprise Technology. This language, as I understand it, was designed to create an ability to recover costs to bill agencies separate from OET's standard rate-setting process in order to cover any costs for the implementation of primarily two sections. The webmaster section, which we already discussed, which we don't believe there will be any cost implications for because it's now voluntary or permissive, and the other section, which was related to establishing standards and a new, say, website for data transparency and data mashups for citizens.
What do the agencies have any thoughts on this? I mean, do they complain? Somebody complained to me yesterday, they're overbilling us as it is. You know, why are you letting us do more?
Mr. Chair, members, we have heard from at least one agency that has had questions on it, and we've also had conversations with Minnesota Management and Budget on it. There are concerns that agencies in this current economic climate may not have an ability to pay for any additional bills or costs for services.
Mr. Chairman, aren't these agreements all arranged with Minnesota Management and Budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, our rate-setting process, which we would view as different from this, does go through a process whereby we work with agencies to come to an agreement of services that they want to purchase from OET, and they then purchase those services that they want to buy from us. This would appear to us to create a separate process from the rate process, whereby we would bill out the cost of the data transparency services to agencies And since that language itself, the data transparency language, is mandatory, it would appear that we would be creating a mandatory bill. That is, we would be billing them for services that they may not necessarily have been requesting or seeking from OET.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think when we were doing this, we wanted to make it part of the regular rate process. I think we talked about that statute and so forth. Is there some way that this can be written so that it's part of the rate process and not in addition to, or it goes through the same process that the rate process does? I mean, specifically in terms of, let's just thinking of developing, you know, we thought this stupidity of having, besides the 36 data centers, every agency developing its own web starting from scratch. You know, suppose that we had some central service that was going, obviously going, they would decide whether it was useful to them, but you ought to then be able to bill them for the part of doing it, which would probably be much less from the cost of them starting to do it themselves. Particularly from, I imagine that in a lot of these places, they probably get a consultant to do it anyway. So, and this is part of the trying to say that we're going to do these things as efficiently as possible. So is there some way to rewrite this so that it's, wouldn't be interpreted, my interpretation was never that it was to be quite as free-flowing as the description now, that this would be done by negotiation. So, and it would be like the regular rate setting process.
Mr. Malenberg, any thoughts?
Mr. Chair, members, we could certainly look at this to see if there's something that we can do over the course of the conference committee.
Okay.
Which is going to be pretty short.
Mr. Chair, I am wondering, I think I'm hearing that they don't really think it's necessary, and I have concerns that if they do set their rates and it's too high, the agencies just aren't going to go to them for anything.
Well, they have to.
And then we end up with them, you know, trying to do this in-house where maybe they could do them more efficiently. I don't know. I think we should just let them negotiate it out themselves.
Well, that's what we intended to happen, but the point is we do want some coordination of data, some coordination of web services, and so forth. So we really, you know, it is a little bit of a balancing act, but we don't want, there is some problems with agencies going, you know, there is some problem because we do want security arrangements and everything under the control of OET. We really don't want a lot of freedom in this area for agencies to go off by themselves. There, I urge you to read some of the OLA reports on security problems and so forth, and to and just look at this on a national issue of the security problems all over the country with very spread out data centers, which is one of the things that we're looking at. So it's trying to bring it in a little closer, so they don't have the freedom that you kind of implied that they did, Senator Roblin. But we did, when we did come up with this language, we didn't intend it to go into the same kind of negotiations and discussions as the rate processes do. And if you also remember in the appropriations bill, we did a cut of, I think the amount finally was the appropriations bill from these divisions, we put a cut of what I think was $2.3 million, and part of the $2.3 million, we listed a set of things that was supposed to make up that $2.3 million cut, and one of them was efficiencies in information systems. So again, it's, you know, we think we're moving in a way further away from independence than many agencies may be.
Well, what do you wish to do?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Olson?
I would not care to pursue this at this time.
Well, I don't know if there's a motion one way or the other, so.
Well, that would be my motion, then.
Well, unless somebody moves it. you know, then we, if somebody moves it, then we vote on it. If somebody doesn't move it, then we move on to some other topic. So,
well, the question is, I think, was the data transparency standards are the same in both? Is that one of the things that's the same in both bills?
It's very similar, except for the issue that was previously before the committee that Microsoft had raised related to standards versus policy. But
and I think wasn't, well, I guess the question that we're asking is, can you implement the new parts of this bill without this language? Including the parts that are identical in both.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, assuming that we resolve the standards versus policy issue. Otherwise, you know, we had the optional webmaster were identical on enhanced access to data. So I don't know what's. Do you need this language to adopt to pursue the rest?
I think it would be difficult for us to implement the data transparency language with or without this language.
Okay.
We don't believe that agencies have the current funds if we were to build them, we don't believe the agencies have the funds in order to pay for these services. That's what we're hearing. Can I say that for sure? No, but we would find it challenging to be in a situation where we're attempting to bill agencies for services that they don't want. And then to attempt to recover those costs.
I think might get us to the, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead.
Which I think might get us to the issue of is data transparency something that we're going to say that we don't need. I mean, the standards policy part is a minor part of that issue, and it's something that we both said, both bodies said that they wanted, and you know, my thought about it, which is that it's something that we really need, that we really need to work to, and obviously the discussion of what the agency is going to contribute and what these agencies are going to do and what OET is going to do is something to be discussed, but I really think it would be a very big mistake to give up on doing that.
And for the record, OET does strongly support data transparency efforts, and you know, we work on these issues to the degree that we can, you know, have staff work on them with our other obligations, because we think that it's a very important issue, and we think we really support the goals of the section because we think it has great value, and we think that, you know, this is something that government will have to do at some point. It's not something that is optional. This is something that we believe citizens are demanding, and it's something that we're working toward.
Well, okay, what do you want to do? Is there a motion? Sir Olsey?
Mr. Chair, I would move to remove Section 33 out of page R22.
Well, I would urge the House members to vote against
it. The motion actually would be to adopt it, since it doesn't go in unless somebody moves to put it in. So, okay. I mean, we can't remove something that is not in there. So,
and Mr. Chair, I'm just going to add that motion to my list of reasons.
Okay. There you go. Is there a motion to adopt it then?
Not at this point.
Okay.
I would rather have some language that makes clear that this is not something that's more has a stronger requirement than any of the questions about rate.
Well, we'll pass
so
it
I would
by.
Like, so I would ask for someone to help with some language that puts it into the regular rate.
Well, if you come up with some language, let me know. We can revisit it. Otherwise, we'll just move on. Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Sir Bonoff and Representative Marquardt are here, so maybe we can revert back to the item that we had talked about on the Commission on Service Innovation, which is in this conference committee. It's also in House File 2227. Representative Marquardt and Senator Bonoff, we were trying to figure out earlier, first of all, where it should be conferred, if it shouldn't be in two different places, and then if it's to be here, which language do at least the authors wish we start looking at so that we know which direction you were interested in. Representative Marquardt, do you have any thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, the original 22-27 that the House worked on actually had three main components: the Senator Bonnef's portion, then it was Representative Hilty's originally, and Senator Metzen's. That was the Innovation Board, and then the third part was Senator Rummel and Representative Mariani, kind of this Policy Institute part. So we had three main parts, and we feel that creates a real strong, it was under the umbrella of the Minnesota Innovation and Research Council. And we just thought all three of those really made a very strong bill. But granted, they could all go separately. So I know I may not be answering your question. Right now, what we have is a conference going on 22-27. But, you know, I'm not going to, I don't know what the fate of that bill may be, so I know you've got Senator Bonnef in this portion, so I wouldn't suggest one way or the other. I do think it's a lot stronger if they're all together, because you do have the Council of Service Innovation, and then you've got the, what we would now call the Innovation Council, and then you would have this task force. So, I mean, they do all seem to go together. I mean, that would be a preference if we could have the dream bill, so to speak.
Well, we've got this conference committee here, and we've got the Commission on Service Innovation as an amendment, actually both in the House and Senate. It's in here, and I guess the first question is, where should it be conferred? I mean, and if you confer it in two different places and there's differences between the language, then we're recreating a bit of a conflict. Which one gets the governor first and which one second? It doesn't matter to me. I mean, we can put it in here, but if it's here, then we should tell the other conference committee be consistent or drop it or something. So what are we doing? So,
Mr. Chair, I guess I would leave that to Senator Bonnef. I mean, we could go without that. We can still do that. So I
without
think
what? I mean, here
without,
there.
Without Article 1 of ours, which is the Senator Bonnef's bill. We can move forward in our bill without that. It doesn't have to be together.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the issue would be if whatever language we adopt, and I don't think there's anything controversial in Senator Bonnef's language that's in this bill, for this Commission on Service Innovation, we would just need some assurance from the Conference Committee on House File 2227 that fine for them to include it and to be redundant, but it would have to be the exact language, and they allow us to make the decisions on it. Do you think there would be any problem with that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, no. That would be fine.
Well, I think we can.
Then in that case, again, Representative Marquardt and Senator Bonnef, as the authors, we're not bound by it, but what's the preference for the language that you've been working on as to which version we adopt, either House or Senate or a combination of both? What should we be looking at from your standpoint?
Mr. Chair, I prefer the language that's in this bill. We actually...
Well, we got the Senate, House and Senate language.
Senate language in this bill, and that is, as I mentioned, Representative Downey concurred with that, and that same language has actually now been amended onto Representative Marquardt's, so they are the same with some very minor changes, and we would, so the only, because in this version we added that citizens.
Representative Marquardt?
Mr. Chair, whatever language is in the bill that came back from the Senate is fine. That is, will work perfect.
Well, the Senate language is on page R22. It's Article 2, Section 1, which would be the Senate language for the Commission on Service Innovation. Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that the two principals are agreeing that the more specific language that's in the Senate bill dealing with the Commission on Service Innovation is agreeable to both of them, and we should set aside the more general notion expressing that was expressed in the House bill and take the more detailed proposal.
Okay.
I'll move that.
We've got the motion out here. Representative Kalin.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to reiterate my caution. I'm not ready to support
Senator Rest's motion, and I think it's a little bit uncomfortable for me because I know that you were the Senate author of the of Senate File 2511.
And, not the same.
I know they're not the same, but there's a good bit of overlap in function and related to local governments, and I just would hope that we give Representative McFarland and Representative Swales a chance to share from their perspective what how whether there is overlap or whether there is not. It appears to me there's a lot of overlap on the local government side. And I hearing from Senator Bonhoeff and Representative Marquardt their desire to move here, but this may be more appropriate for that for the discussion in their conference committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, that bill already passed and has been signed by the governor, and they're not involved in this conference committee.
The point is we're dealing this whatever we pass here should interact properly with the with what's been passed into law, is I think what Representative Kalin is saying. And I think he's, even though we do have Senator Rest as a Senate author here, he's interested in hearing from Representative Swales and McFarland, who I know had a little sense of what were all these other commissions doing. We would like to hear that they think that this, which will pass later than theirs, is different and doesn't interfere with theirs, and that theirs will that will work.
Well, and
that will work fine with that.
Let me just point out, though, that on the Senate language, that we would have to clean up a few things here, as counsel has noted to us. On page R22, if you go to page R20, if you look at line 13.28, it says the commission is established to provide to the legislature and the Board of Innovation. Well, we don't know what the Board of Innovation is going to happen, so we would have to strike that reference to the Board of Innovation there, as well as if you look at page R24 on line 15.16 of the Senate language, that also refers to the Board of Innovation. And so, and Kelsey may find some other inconsistencies there too, but we can't be referring to something that may or may not happen.
It's not in this bill.
Yes.
Yeah. So we can't just adopt the Senate language. We'd have to.
Where was the second reference, Mr. Chairman?
Page. If you look at page R24, line 15.16, that's the reference to the Board of Innovation, which would have to be seen there. So, Representative Conner, are you suggesting that we just set the matter aside until we hear from Representative Swales and Representative Downey, is that what you're, or is Representative Marquardt?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just back to the comparison of the bill, of the governance bill of Representative Swales and McFarland, this is very distinct. And they complement each other, but very distinct. The Governance Council is looking at getting local units of government together and looking at reducing the obstacles that prevent them from sharing services and so forth. Just looking at Senator Bonhoeff's portion of the bill is looking at a strategic plan that would suggest and look at such things as local and state government structural redesign. I mean, it's a much broader, lot more reform, and just really looking at the overall picture of where you could look at efficiencies, and it's going to come up with a strategic plan that could really create some huge, redesign in certain areas. So they complement each other, but very distinct, in my view.
Well, I think the request we've had from Mr. Chairman, from Representative Kalin, is just to hear those words from Representative Swale's mouth. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Okay. Well, Senator Rust, do you wish to just hold on? What do you wish to do? You made the motion.
I'll withdraw the motion, sure. I'm sorry that Representative Kalin can't take my word for it.
He won't be here next year. So.
Yeah, it's very different. But I'll talk to Representative Swales, and I think she will agree with Representative Marquardt and me that the bills are very different.
Representative Kalin?
I just want to appreciate Senator Rest's patience with me, and she exercised that for 9 days
in
this role.
You are a young man, aren't you?
okay that Senator Bonhoff and Representative Marquardt will just set it aside again, but we do appreciate you clarifying that, and this actually will give council a little bit more, a few more minutes to just double-check it to make sure we don't have any other matters in the Senate language that need to be cleaned up before we consider it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, just some background. Both Representative Swales and I and Representative McFarland worked for a year last year on our shared services initiatives, and we came at the same goal but from different perspectives, and then we didn't talk at all during the interim. We came back year two and both presented bills that again had similar objectives in different arenas, never having spoke that we're on parallel paths. So we've actually found it pretty interesting that we continue to work on parallel paths but at different things. So to be clear, when I worked on the shared services with school districts, what I saw most is that you can't just isolate school districts because you have counties, you have cities, you have the MinSCU system. And so I met with many business leaders, nonprofits, various education leaders over the interim to say, what is really the best way to redesign government? And came to this structure. And one important difference is that the convening person in the Commission on Service Innovation is the Chief Information Officer, because it's my belief that technology will be the driver of real reform. And so Commissioner Connor is here, and he has worked closely with me on this language, because whether or not we can change our county structure and find different ways to leverage efficiencies will also depend on what is the platform that we're using, how ready are we to be able to institute some of those changes. And so it's very different from the Swales and McFarland. They haven't worked with me on mine, so they may not know that, but that's the background.
Okay, anything further? Okay, and we'll set it aside until we hear from Reverend Swales, and then I think we'll be ready to move on this.
Okay. I think Mr. Shepherd has some technical things for the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, while Representative Marquardt, Senator Bonhoff are here, in the other bill, House File 2227, you made this section effective the day following final enactment because you wanted the appointments to be made by June 30th, and so I thought the conferees here might want to consider making this section effective immediately if it were to be adopted.
You know, with the permission of the conference committee, maybe we should just adopt the technical amendments now so that we don't lose sight of that when we get them all before us. Mr. Shepherd and Mr. Bonner, did you have any suggestions as to what we need to do to clean up the Senate language?
Mr. Chairman, I can take it here pretty quickly. On R22 on the Senate side, on 13.28, delete the Board of Innovation. And then I have a question for Senator Bonhoff. The language for the Commission on Service Innovation that is in House File 2227 includes an additional member from the Citizens League. Do you want to take care of that here as well? Because that's not included here.
Right.
To do that, on page 14, after line 8, insert a new clause 7 that would say one representative of the Citizens League, semicolons, and then you can give staff the instruction to renumber those clauses. And then on page R24, on 14.33, you'll see that meetings of the commission are subject to Chapter 13D. The same issue came up in the conference committee on Senate Rest Bill, the Collaborative Governance Council, and I think the resolution arrived at there was probably a little easier for dealing with these groups to deal with. That conference committee decided simply to require that meetings should be open to the public. So you might want to be consistent and do the same thing here. And that would just, on page 14, line 32, delete are subject to Chapter 13D and insert shall be open to the public to take care of that. Wow. Compliance with 13D is a little more complicated.
Open meeting.
And then the other remaining reference to the Board of Innovation is on page 15, line 16.
Trust me.
Delete everything with, so just delete N to the Board of Innovation established under section 465.7902. Okay. And finally, as Mr. Shepherd suggested, on page 15, line 35, after line 35, add an effective date to make it effective the day following final enactment.
Mr. Chair, I'll, to show my good faith here, I'll move those technical.
Yeah, we're just adopting the language, not the article or the section right now. So Representative Kalin moves the technical changes to the Senate language. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We will then set this issue aside again, and then, as I say, as soon as everybody says, well, comes in, I think we'll be involved in one. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The House Rules Committee is going to need this room in about 15 minutes. So we have just a limited time to do what we can right now and then move on. So, Representative Kahn, what else would you want to select?
Let me point out two things which I don't have people here to. I'll point out, just to draw the Senate's attention to them. One is on R21, the depository accounts, which requests the Carlson School to study potential transfer to community financial institutions. That came from Representative Mahoney, and it's an attempt to put, it's an attempt to have state funds spread more around the state.
Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I don't know if I object to this, except we don't have any money to give the school, so it really is a request. But there is a pilot project related to this in the higher ed policy bill, and it has the 8 different MNSCU institutions will be allowed to put their reserve funds into local community financial institutions, and then they are supposed to give a report back on that to see, like, if it's losing them any money or if they think that it's going to be helping the local community banks and credit unions and things like that. And so I don't know if that's enough of a – it's a pilot project. It is in that bill. I don't know if it's been signed yet or
this
not.
Is
Well, it was in the conference report.
Yeah, well, that's probably okay then. But the point is, I think this is state funds. This is the transfer of state funds. So it's state government funds. So it's a little bit different. It isn't doing anything, obviously. And I do believe that the Carlson School stepped forward and said they were interested in doing
it. Well, we'll be taking a recess, so we'll have time to flesh that that issue out during recess.
Then I'll put out another one, which is, again, we have the one missing member of our conference committee, Representative Winkler, who was the LCC to issue RFP, RFI for business intelligence and information analytics software. Again, is trying to build at least the House information system to a better place.
Just our fiscal staff is aware of it. We hadn't studied it, so we're not quite sure about that. But as I say, we're going to have to take a recess because it's going to take a few minutes to tear this room down and build up the House Rules Committee. We'll be in recess. I don't know what time we're going to be able to come back and meet again or where, but stay tuned. Do you know what the House's plan is when you go into session? So, and I don't know when the Senate's going to go into session.
We're going in at 7, allegedly.
Okay.
7 o'clock, yes. And we've waived the midnight rule, Mr. Chairman, so we'll be there until we're not.
Okay.
We can use this room
after rules is done, but they're going to need it next. So we're going to be in recess, and we'll just have to wait to the ebb and flow of this floor session. So we stand in recess. Thank you.
Okay, I will resume the conference committee on Senate File 3134. A few minutes ago, I said we would not meet for about another half hour, but as long as we have the opportunity to get everybody here, we're trying to round up those folks that may have been here, so we may have to pull things off if somebody stepped out of the room.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kahn.
There were another couple of small things that I think that there shouldn't be, and I know see Mr. Rhodes is here. One is the one on R6, the local government capital grants. That was an issue where there was an appropriation. An appropriation was made, I think in the capital bonding bill, but it doesn't matter. And then the governor line item vetoed the money, but the language still stays. So they just wanted it clear that they could, that the grants could be made with the available appropriations. And Mr. Rhodes is here if you need him to.
We have Mr. Rhodes. Could you explain what's happening here?
On R6.
Members, Representative Kahn explained it well. The provision was in two sections of the bonding bill, and one was in with the appropriation that got line item vetoed. That's the bond off language, right, Representative Kahn?
We're looking at page R6, I guess section 10.
Yeah, and then the and then that language also appeared later in the bill.
It said that the commissioner shall make, commissioners shall make grants to counties, cities, towns, and school districts to acquire, etc. And so then they just wanted the qualification that that would be within the limits of available appropriations, since the money to do that was vetoed, but the language with it wasn't vetoed.
Okay, and this is not going to be corrected in the technical corrections bill
that
or any other place?
That is correct. That's not being corrected. No.
Okay. Okay, any questions on this item? Okay, Representative Kahn. Okay, vote moves the section 10 of the House language on page R6. Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails.
Carried it, Jeremy.
I'm sorry?
Then there's another, I think, little one.
Okay.
Two, which I think this came from, this came from OET or state barter restrictions. Was that from OET or from administration?
OET.
Which? Okay. That's R7.
Section 12. Let's see. Section 12 of the House side. Okay. Page R7, section 12. Okay. State barter restrictions applies to contracts over $100,000 annually instead of $100,000 total. Mr. Meilenberg.
Mr. Chair, members, this provision was brought to us by a division in OET that is responsible for broadband. We operate the state's MNET network, and this helps provide internet connectivity services to not only state agencies, but school districts and local governments. And one of the things that they've started looking at is what are our opportunities as federal money has come in to start build out of private fiber in the ground. To what extent can we enter into arrangements with these vendors to say, if you offer us an opportunity to use your fiber to run our services on it, you can use our fiber, essentially agreeing that they can use our fiber and we can use theirs. It's a win-win for the state because it increases connectivity. This section from a couple years ago attempts to restrict these sort of arrangements where essentially money doesn't change hands. And frankly, we've discussed the purpose of the statute with a number of people, and we don't entirely understand why the statute exists to begin with, but we decided that maybe just a good baby step to move forward would be to offer a clarification of the statute, nothing more than, it doesn't even really change the purpose, but clarifies the $100,000 in what sort of time period it would exist in. And that would allow us to move forward on some of the arrangements we're looking at.
Mr. Meilenberg, is there, it would be fairly easy to identify a contract over $100,000. Either it is or it is not. But if you're doing it in increments, you got a $10,000 contract here, an $8,000 contract there. At some point, somebody's going to step over the threshold and violate the section of statute when you've got a cap of $100,000 annually. Isn't this a trap for the unwary? If you have it, in the aggregate, all these little pieces, ultimately something's going to total up $100,000, and the legislative arm is going to say, wait a minute, you were limited to $100,000 annually, you exceeded that. That's how I read the language change. Representative Kahn?
Well, I think it's easier because you just keep track for a year.
Well,
$100,000 total is the thing that gives you more of a problem.
My view is it's easier to screw up. I mean, if OET wants this, I don't want to get any problems, having somebody not keeping track on their spreadsheet and all of a sudden they go over the cap, the threshold. So,
but the problem is that now it's you can't do it. It loosens the cap. So you still have the cap, so there's still the problem.
Well, but
except
what?
Except it's tighter. But.
Yeah. Well, as I said, well, okay.
I don't know.
That's how I'm seeing it.
Mr. Chair, members, as we have talked to the Department of Administration, and they've had some resources on it, have told us that there's a lack of clarity among agencies as to when the $100,000 applies. Some might consider it on an annual basis, and some might view it as over the life of the contract. So from our perspective, we were bringing a certain amount of clarity to the to the statute that would also permit us to enter into these arrangements. So it served not only as for the purpose of clarifying what the statute meant, but it would permit us to move forward with some of these arrangements for the time being.
Any questions on this section for anybody? Anybody want to be heard on it?
Okay, I'd move that we put in this section.
Reverend Kahn moves the state barter restrictions, which are in page R7, section 12 of the House language, be adopted. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The section is adopted. I've got a question of the House. Were you able to circle with around Representative Swales to find out back on the Commission on Service Innovation? Do we know the answer to that one yet? Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, I spoke with Representative Swales and Representative McFarland to pretty thorough conversation. I think there's still a little bit of question about, I don't think there's much question over the value of kind of generally what Senator Bonhoff has proposed, but I think there's some question about the overlap still. I don't know if Chair Kahn had a chance to touch base with the governor's office on the cost, because I think there's a question about the fiscal note or potential cost as well. I think there's still just some concerns that are outstanding.
Well, yeah, I think for example, there are some requirements for OET to do things in this. And I guess now that we have OET here, question on the, OET gets to convene the meeting. Is that just a one-time thing or what? Someone from, Mr. Meilenberg, is this a Terry Bonhoff bill that we're looking at?
Mr. Meilenberg, what's
the
topic?
The state chief information officers shall convene the first meeting of the commission. And is there requirements for the, again, Senator Bonhoff seems to think that there's a great emphasis on technology in this, and the issue is what's the role of the state,
just
the CIO?
Just to clarify. Senator Rest has developed some sort of some guidelines when we develop these commissions and so forth, because she and I served on the Sesquicentennial Commission, and there was never an indication versus who was to convene the meeting, the first meeting.
Yeah.
And so she's quite particular to make sure that when we organize these things, you have specific dates, who calls the first meeting, what happens after that, it's up to the body. So that's just kind of, sort of the standard language. She likes to see the boilerplate that she has in there. Not that they're going to run it from that at 10.4. Who kicks it off? So.
Okay.
Do you have any other particular issues or concerns, Mr. Meilenberg? We were focusing more on the Senate language as modified. Is there anything that OET had any issues on the Senate language here?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that this language is consistent with what was previously in the bill in earlier iterations, in which we had said to reported to Senator Bonhoff when she asked us about it that we would be glad to convene the first meeting. That, however, we would be unable to provide staff resources if they were expecting OET to staff the new commission. And I believe that there was language, at least at one time, to indicate that. There would be no requirement for anyone to provide any public funds in order to staff the commission. And I believe it's still in here.
Okay.
In Section C.
Mr. Bonner has called my attention to the fact apparently Mass of the Management and Budget has some concerns with some of the language that starts in the Senate language 14.35 mm-hmm. about private funds that they have to be then responsible for. Mr. Bonner, did you elaborate?
Mr. Chairman, again, yeah, on R24, if you look at paragraph C there on 14.35, it's very clear the Commission may receive private money and there is no appropriation of public money made. That language goes on to say that the private money that's received must be deposited in a special revenue account and appropriated. And I think the concern is who would administer that, what kind of delays and extra paperwork that would require. The suggestion was, since this is completely private, the funding part of it at least, you could simply delete those requirements, the appropriation of the private money, and leave the Commission free to do that work on its own. So that
what language would we change that?
So, Mr. Chairman, then on 14.35, delete money received, mm-hmm. and all the language running up to on line 15.3. So that what would remain is the Commission may solicit and receive private contributions. No public money may be used to provide payment of per diems or expenses, and the Commission may hire staff.
So the sentence about the Commission may provide per diem payments to voting members as determined by the Commission from the appropriations, that's not needed, is you're saying that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, again, that would refer to the appropriation of right. the private funds, so it would be necessary.
I see.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
we would then just have three sentences in this.
Correct.
They may solicit, receive private contributions, no public money to be used for per diems, and they may hire staff. And those three sentences, I guess. Did you wish to?
Mr. Chair, just a question of that. I'm happy to move that. Yeah. If I think it's a question for Mr. Bonner. If it's clear enough that we're not going to be expending public funds beyond sort of the first convening and the other, I mean, we don't want to put an outright ban on expensive public funds because then you can't convene the meeting, and it's obviously a critical piece, but I do have concerns that, I mean, we haven't seen a fiscal note, or at least I haven't seen a fiscal note on this, and I don't know if it truly is structured to be fully funded privately.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was in the Finance Committee, and the only thing that remained that was a cost was legislative per diem, which is why they said legislators would be non-voting members and just may attend, because if they were appointed, mm-hmm. then they said they would not waive the provision that they could ask for a compensation. Especially mileage issues and things like that. So when it went through finance, that's what they changed in order to make it a no-cost issue for the state.
It did go through finance and ways and means in the House, and the issue of a cost here was not raised.
Okay. Mr. Chair, then I'll move deletion of those two sentences that Mr. Bonner identified, starting on 14.35 up to 15.3.
Okay. And for Senator Rust, we're looking at the language on the Commission on Service Innovation, and there's some language in there on the money received, which apparently Minnesota Management and Budget has raised as an issue about, you know, do they have to be the one that the agent on the private contributions? The language is kind of inconsistent in here, so we're moving to delete on page R24, lines 14 to 35, the sentence that starts on that money received and through on page 15.3 through the words in this paragraph, period. Delete that language. That's Representative Kalin's motion. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
So the rest.
So where will the money go?
There's no appropriation in here.
No.
the money that they raise privately from grants or whatever, who's going to have control over that? That's why we put that language in there.
Metropolitan's office.
So that there would be, so there would be a fiscal agent. I mean, all these groups that create themselves and go around thinking they can spend money, like the Sesquicentennial Commission, that had to fight for a year to get a fiscal agent. We were trying for those that were going to fund their activities by private funds, that there would be some accountability for them because it says in statute, and so who's their fiscal agent? Oh, Representative Kalin.
Well, this, Senator Ress, I don't remember when you came in, but Mr. Bonner pointed out this was raised to him as a problem by MMB. So maybe.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Ress, I'm just carrying the governor's water on this.
Yeah, right, I can tell that.
So, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Bonner, so what did MMB say could be the fiscal agent for these dollars raised? Who would have authority to spend them once they were raised? My guys, who can...
Mr. Chairman, the law would be silent on this. What I will point out that is somewhat unusual here is there is no public money involved. I'm not familiar with any precedent like that, where you'd make a public entity responsible for administering exclusively private institutions.
So who's going to do it?
Mr. Chairman, I guess the commission will set its bylaws and so forth.
You have to incorporate.
Oh, my.
So
they
are incorporated.
Mr. Bonner.
As this is constructed, is there something that is a commission it's a legal entity in law that has some kind of implied powers or authority? Or is this something that's being created sui generis?
Mr. Chairman and Representative. I think the power the commission has is to respond to the legislative request to prepare a report. That would be about the extent of the powers of the commission. I suppose one could add, too, that they have the power to use meeting space provided by the state chief information officer.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bonner, I guess the question would be things like, I mean, if you create a corporation in statute, you have implied powers, you have designated powers, they can file articles of incorporation, they can do all these things, they can sue and be sued. You know, if they're operating wholly privately financially, are they also wholly private legally and in all other respects as well?
That sounds like a rhetorical question.
No, I mean, Mr. Chair, it's really a real question about what is this thing?
And Mr. Chair, if I could put some... I do think Representative Winkler raises a really important larger point as well as a very specific point that I think Senator Ress is going after, too. I want to be clear that I think that convening the group and having the authority and the blessing of the legislature is really important.
Yes.
So that it mandates that they come back with a product and the legislature also listen to that product.
Because it's authorizing it.
But without the bill, that conversation should happen and could happen as well.
And that's true with all of these groups that are being committed, that are being...
Mr. Chair, I guess would the solution be to have the LCC be a fiscal agent for this?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, and I don't know that I'm perhaps not the most qualified to answer this, but it has been relayed to me that there's an administrative concern about handling the appropriation from MMB. In addition, I think Mr. Hubinger is also concerned about having to administer something like this. So what I have put forth as a possible solution is to eliminate that, and I guess the distinction being it is completely private funding. One could point out they'd be free not to raise any money.
Mr. Chair?
Full seat.
Thank you. At 15.4 and 15.5 and then down at 15.8 and 15.9, they're going to have the ability to hire people. And I guess that kind of plays into this question, you know, who are those people going to work for? Are they going to have benefits? And, you know, who's paying their work comp and all of those things? So I think we've muddled into a can of worms here.
Sir Bonoff, we're trying to muddle through something here. Minnesota Management and Budget has raised some concerns about the fact that although private money is being raised, we actually did vote to delete some lines in here, but they're not sure that they want to be the ones to be responsible for what are private funds. So if somebody from MMB is here or somebody can talk and suggest how we can, who's going to handle the private money and do that, because that's not how we normally, I mean, normally the legislature appropriates state funds, the agency's responsible for them. Ms. Reed, do you have any thoughts?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Abigail Reed. I'm from MMB, and I did raise a concern that I think Mr. Bonner has pretty much explained, that the intent appeared to be to keep this outside of state government, and then there was what appeared to be a conflicting statement then added later, having the money deposited in the state treasury. So I think I'd leave it to Senator Bonoff to discuss what the intent of the bill was. We just raised what appeared to be a conflict between the state treasury depository depositing of the funds versus the intent to stay outside of state.
So what does that mean?
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, members, the thought when it says that the commission may hire staff is that in speaking to people, for example, from the chamber and from the business community, they envisioned creating a website for the public to weigh in during this process.
We have that's not the issue that we're talking about. On 1435 to 1415.3, it talked about the private contributions being deposited in a special revenue fund and other issues about per diem, which is not, again, not a government function for private contributions. So we had voted actually to delete the language about depositing the private funds into a special revenue account because it's that's different from our number of us. Rest.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kalin, I think, may have a suggestion for this, and that is to leave in solicit and receive private contributions.
That's in.
And then after that, say the commission may contract with one of its members to serve as its fiscal agent, and then it wouldn't, and then it shouldn't, that kind of thing shouldn't give MMB heartburn. But I would ask them, this language is also somewhere else with one of these other groups, and so you better start looking, because it's there somewhere else, and I don't remember which one, because people were, in some of these things, were talking about raising private money, and then they had no place, no way of asserting responsibility over it, and we use this language somewhere else for something.
Mr. Barron may have some.
Remember where that
here.
Was, Mr. Barron?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, I'm not sure exactly which commission you have in mind there.
Senator Rummel's bill. Okay.
Senator Rummel's bill.
We should look at Senator Rummel's bill.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's focus on this.
But just not in this one.
Yeah. Yes. Mr. Chairman, there's one more addition that might be helpful since we're clarifying the private status of this entity. And I think in this paragraph on page 15, line 5, after the period, you could insert a sentence that says, staff hired by the commission are not state employees. It'd be helpful for purposes of liability and health insurance and so forth.
And hiring freezes, Mr. Bonner.
Well, let's not go there for the moment. So, so is that the only change you would suggest, or
that's correct?
Okay.
So what about my suggestion, Mr. Chairman? Would that be okay?
Included with that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's what I want to double check. Yeah. Do you have any suggested language? Commissioner may contract or something, or members to hire fiscal agents or something along that.
Or perhaps
it's bizarre.
The commissioner may designate.
Like
the commission must designate one of its member organizations to serve as its fiscal agent.
Okay. Does that work?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, it seems better to require it than to leave it open-ended.
Yep.
Must.
Okay. Although there's the lawyer in training. Not Representative Winkler who saw that.
We'll be cured of that.
I have...
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon reminds me it's must, not shall.
Why don't we just give the council a minute to make sure that we got the language here before us. Okay, do you want to read it one more time?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, on page 14, line 35, and I'll go through, I think, everything that you would want to include in your motion. Delete money received and everything through page 15, line 33, up through no, and insert, the commission must designate one of its members to serve as a fiscal agent for the commission. And then on page 15, line 5 after the period, insert, staff hired by the commission are not state employees.
Okay. Now, we've already deleted the language, so this would be new language here. Discussion, is there...
Mr. Chair, I mean, I think that's a fine kind of practical fix, but I'm still not clear about what sort of entity we're creating. We're creating sort of a public chartered commission that's entirely private in nature. It's not a non... I mean, it's... Is it a taxable one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, and excuse those who have heard me say this before, the purpose of this commission was after, actually, we spent that year working on shared services, it occurred to me in that process that it goes way beyond just school districts, that in fact, we really need to reorganize, re-engineer all government functions so that they can deliver services most effectively, which is why this bill came forward after speaking with members of the business community, the foundations, the education, and its purpose is to be discrete in time, 1 year, and conduct monthly meetings, often be chaired by Gopal Khanna so that its driver is looking at how technology can be leveraged in this process. And so its function isn't ongoing. It is, in fact, outside of the legislature so that an objective group, we can be there in the back of the room, can come up with a plan for how we would do this redesign work and be ready to report to the legislature when the new legislature convenes next year.
Mr. Chair,
just to clarify, it'll be convened by OET, not necessarily chaired by them.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, exactly.
Representative
Winkler? Mr. Chair, Representative Bonoff, I understand.
Senator. Sorry.
I would like you more as a representative, but it's, I understand the intent, but I still don't, I don't know if Mr. Shepard or Mr. Bonner are believe, I just don't know what, this is just kind of a strange hybrid creature to me as a legal matter. I can understand that if it's a nonprofit or a partnership between nonprofits, but when you create it and call it a commission and have it be entirely private and have its employees be not state employees, I just don't know if there is, if we have precedent for such an animal as this.
I don't know.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, members, I mean, there have been a number of times in statute where the legislature has created commissions and designated them as not state agencies, designated them as nonprofit entities, but some of those, probably because they're more permanent in nature, have spent more time stating what laws apply to the commission and what laws don't apply to the commission. And I think this one doesn't, there's nothing inherent in the word commission that carries a body of law with it. So I think in this case, with the language that Mr. Bodern suggested about a private fiscal agent, this would be, as much as you said, I think, it would be a privately, a sort of a publicly chartered group of private people that would basically be responsible, other than having to conduct their meetings in an open manner. I don't think they likely would be subject to laws governing state or local government. They probably wouldn't be purchasing anything, so that, you know, I don't know that you'd need to worry about some of those laws, but it's not specified. And there's nothing inherent that I'm aware of that would apply.
Everyone, Simon?
Just
quick question for Mr. Shepherd or Mr. Bonner. What about the Data Practices Act?
If it's a private entity, it wouldn't apply, I don't think so.
And we removed reference
to
13D.
Right. Yeah. Got it. Okay. We already removed that.
Okay.
You said they're open
meetings. Meetings.
That's open meetings.
That's the
open
meetings.
Did we adopt the language yet?
Mr. Chair.
I'm just wondering, although the Commission to End Poverty was partly funded by the state, it also received quite a few private donations. I'm wondering how those were handled. When they came in, it's easier to get donations if it can be a tax-deductible donation, but I don't know. And I know that our administrator for that committee, he was on a contract. And I don't think he was considered a state employee during that time either, Greg Gray, because he had a contract and it ended at a time specific. But
that's another example.
The LCC did help us coordinate that whole thing, and I don't think Greg is. Is Greg here?
I agree.
My memory said that was rolled through the LCC, right? That it was a function of the LCC, and so the private,
and that would clarify.
There are no, and there are legislators on that too.
Right, and there were legislative members.
Then this is the appropriate.
Well, is there a desire to take action on the language as read by council?
I'm with that.
Senator Rust moves the language read by council on the page R24 regarding the contracting of members of fiscal agent and the staff not being state employees. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
And, Mr. Chair. Mr.
Kalin.
The other, I have one technical amendment to make, and that's on R25, 15.35, I think. Senator Bonoff has repeatedly referred to this group as a one-year group, and so if that's the intent, I want to make sure that that's the language that we have. And so we currently have it set to expire after 2 years, so I wonder if she could speak to that.
Yeah, and we actually amended this to have an immediate effective date, so it goes in effect not August 1st, but it does expire on June 30th, 2012. Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, we changed that date so that if the Board of Innovation were in existence and this group was providing recommendations to that Board of Innovation, they would still be in existence during a transition period, and that's why we moved out the effective date or the end date.
And Mr. Chair, earlier this afternoon we did to deal with the shift into this bill from Representative Markowitz's bill, and I can't remember, it is your bill, is that right? Who's the senator? I can't remember.
No, no, I have the Swales that's bill.
Your bill? The Betzel bill? Excuse me. But we took out the reference to the Board of Innovation. So
Metzen. Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, we did, and this still does not refer to the Board of Innovation, but I would prefer to leave that date in there because should the Board of Innovation be approved and go on, then this would, in fact, be making recommendations to that board, and that's why we wanted to leave that date. So their strategic plan would be done, but we wanted to have them be in existence.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chair, that actually wouldn't, under the language that we have here, I'm not making a recommendation to the Board of Innovation because we did take that out. I mean, I think this is the sort of structural question about the best home for this and the best, and it goes to the larger concern that I'd like to hear from address after we deal with this, the life of this commission, and that is the relationship between the Board of Innovation, potentially this commission, and the Collaborative Governance Council. So the commission, the council, and the board.
Well, those issues are not before this conference committee. Senator Bonoff and Representative Markowitz did express a desire to have this conference committee carry the Commission on Service Innovation, but what happens in a different conference committee we don't control. I think the way we're going, I would hope that we would wrap this bill up before the other one wraps up, but we don't want to pass inconsistent bills around here. But Senator Rust?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't see any, even if there's no direct requirement to report to the Board of Innovation, which is yet to be enacted, it seems to me that there's that flexibility with 2 years, and it's not costing the state anything to have them in existence for that. So, I think it's just fine. Otherwise, I mean, you could make it a year, and then it could just be renewed for an additional year next year in the next session. So, I mean, six of one, half a dozen of the other. I don't see any reason why we need to change that, even if that board did not come into being. Or if it did, they could still make their recommendations there, even though they weren't required to do that under the language we would be putting in this bill.
Mr. Chair, so the larger concern that I have, that to which that the sort of life of this lifespan of this commission is concerned, is in the council bill that's already law, the League of Minnesota Cities, Townships, School Board Association, AMC, AFSCME, Admin, SEIU, and the Chamber are all in the council, as well as half the membership on the commission. So my concern, I know that Representative Swales is here, I know that someone from the cities is here, I don't know of other members from the council that are also named in the commission, that my concern is if we have members required to participate meaningfully in both, that they may be so committed to both in terms of time that it waters down their ability to do meaningful work in either. And so I'm wondering if they'd be willing to come forward and just address this concern about this relationship between the two.
Well, once again, Representative Kalin, these groups have been involved in the development of these proposals and have agreed to already to participate, and ones that did not want to participate are not in the bills. In fact, amendment in a bill that was already passed included, to start with, off the floor of the House, the Chamber and NFIB. Mm-hmm. And before we close that conference committee, Representative Swales and I and Representative McFarland went out and asked the Chamber and the NFIB if they wanted to participate. And if they didn't want to participate, they weren't going to be in it. And the Chamber said yes, and NFIB said they weren't interested. So the groups that are listed here have all testified in policy committees that they want to be part of these groups and that they have enough energy and people to participate both in the group that would be meeting with the state auditor, Representative Swales in my bill, and also Senator Bonham's bill and here comes the cities.
Well, okay, this is getting complicated. Go ahead, do we have some additional testimony? Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much. Senator Bonhoff just wanted
to... We need to identify ourselves with the council.
I am so sorry. I'm Representative Marcia Swales.
Thank you.
I was the chief author of the bill that Senator Rest is referring to. Both of us worked very hard on getting that passed, and it was signed into law by the governor just last week. I think what I would like to say is that these bills are on a different trajectory, and the one that we developed is dealing with the four basic units of government. We traveled the state asking across the state what are the concerns that you have, what are the obstacles, and we have an outcome-based bill that will be addressing those. I really don't know very much about the CSI bill that is before you. I don't know what the outcomes are required in it, but I do know that they're different bills, and I'm just going to leave it to the conference committee to determine what you want to do. But I'm very pleased with the support that we received for the collaborative governance.
Okay, we have some additional testimony. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities, and Senator Rest is spot on. In earlier committees, particularly on the Senate side, we voiced support of basically all of these efforts moving forward, knowing that there were lots of people interested in these sorts of issues of streamlining, mandate relief, pushing forward on technology. And frankly, I've been wondering myself over the last few weeks just how these would all get sorted out, because there are other, as you know, there are just a number of vehicles moving out there.
You think? Okay, so Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I had some further conversation with Mr. Shepard, and I think I'm comfortable with the way this is structured, and I think we can...
Anything further on this issue? Is there a motion?
Yes.
There is.
I move that we include the language for the CSI as it has been amended by members of the committee, both the technical and the substantive changes.
This would be article, the Senate language, Article 2, Section 1 as amended. Representative Kahn.
Section 1, so we're not
Section 1.
Section 2.
No, only Section 1. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else? Thank you. Okay, so that's been done. Reverend Kahn, what else did you wish to have us focus on?
I would look, since Mike Meilenberg and Gopal Khan were here, I'd like them to address the language of standards.
Okay, back on the summary, this is I think we had in concept heard that the OET permissive language for webmasters, okay, we have identical language with enhanced access to public data. We do have a difference between the Senate description of policy for transparency. The House refers to standards for transparency. Do we have Mr. Meilenberg or somebody wants to discuss that issue? Anybody here wants better language?
Also, Mr. Chairman, I believe Nancy Hilden is here to also discuss the position of the libraries.
Okay. Is there anybody else here who wants to be heard on this issue before we move ahead? Now is the time to come forward. I don't see Mr. Larson. I don't know if he's here. He is. Okay. Now is the time to be heard on this issue. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, we think that the word policy and the word standard are both sufficient in order to allow us to do the work under the section. If the question is what word would OET choose if it had its option, we would probably choose the word standards because we believe that that's most consistent with current business practices by OET and working with other agencies, and we believe that that's consistent with what our statutes currently charge us and permit us to do.
Thank you. Any questions? Mr. Larson, did you get any further information?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the conference committee, again, for the record, my name is Dan Larson with the law firm of Lockridge Grindle now, and representing this evening Microsoft Corporation. I was able to reach someone at the company, and while we appreciate certainly the offer by Representative Kahn to try to come up with some language here this evening, I think the language, or clearly they feel that the language that was offered actually makes things more complicated and perhaps gets us even further away from in creating more concerns. Again, they are completely comfortable with the Senate language in terms of creating overarching policies in this area and remain to have concerns regarding the House language.
Anybody else wants to be heard?
Nancy Hilden?
I don't know. I mean, I keep asking, and if somebody wants to talk, they should come to the table.
I'll just make it.
I'd ask myself for record.
Yeah. Chair Kahn, or Chair Betzel, Nancy Hilden. In the past, IBM has weighed in on this whole issue, if you recall, a few years ago regarding open standards. They're part of a large national effort to move in that direction. Behind that is a concern that when you have data that isn't that is subject to a standard that is controlled by a private entity, that it is not
necessarily in the long-term interest of the state. So that has been kind of the context. What I do have to tell you, though, is that I unlike Mr. Larson, have not been able to get a hold of anybody tonight on the specifics here. But that is the context of kind of this whole issue of what are standards, what are policies, and historically where IBM has weighed in has been in support of this broader idea that you want to have some kind of open standards. Now, how that weighs in with the specific debate is your debate is a little more nuanced than that. That's my feedback.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, in light of the fact that we use the word standards all throughout state statutes, that everything that OET has talks about standards, and that when you open Microsoft's catalog, in fact, one of the first things you see is a whole page of things using the word standards. I guess I would move the House language for this.
Okay. I'm personally more comfortable with policies, but I guess we'll just take a vote and see where people are at on this. So, standard versus policy. So Representative Kahn moves the standards to be used, which is the House language. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, say no.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Is there another motion?
I sense they can be moved.
Mr. Chair,
I'll move the Senate policy.
You call.
Call for the vote.
All right, well, we'll call for the vote. All those in favor of the Senate policy, say aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
Oh, darn.
Filmage.
I sense we are at an impasse.
What is standard policy?
The Senate language?
I just brought that up earlier.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, standard policy.
Totally bad.
Bright minds think alike, but so do yours.
What
said bright minds think alike, but so do yours.
I do.
There's
a possibility. I don't know if this destroys it or does it. It's essential to say that we say... Well, what do you do with the next sentence? Standards shall...
The CEO.
Okay. Suppose we then said, suppose we then say that the CIO shall enhance public access to electronic data standards maintained by state government.
This is page R11.
R11, line 912.
Okay, R11, 912. Okay, let me catch up here.
So the CIO with the information policy, et cetera, shall enhance public access to electronic data standard data maintained by state government consistent with the requirements of Chapter 13. The CIO must ensure that.
So you'd be basically page 912, delete the words, develop standards too.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work, folks? Boy,
yes, Mr. Chair, I believe that standards on 913 are also being replaced by CIO.
CIO, yes.
That's
municipal. And then the first thing.
Okay, change standard
concept works.
And would the,
if that concept works, we'd fix it elsewhere. And then,
Mr. Chair, members, as I understand the change, it does shift the responsibility and change quite a lot the meaning of the section. OET's typical work does include forming both policies and standards, but to actually say that we are not responsible for developing policies and standards, but we are instead responsible for enhancing all of it, mm-hmm. I think changes the meaning of sure. what we would have to do.
We got it. Okay.
That's not what we're sorry.
I don't think I've seen somebody retreat from be sent away from the table that quickly. Have you?
That's pretty fast.
State agencies and
Am. We gave you the whole commission. You can't take our standards. Synonyms.
Criteria.
Criteria? You don't know who's here. No, open source is the standards.
Oh, we're not going that way.
How do you like the word guidelines?
I can live with it.
You don't even have it down right.
Yeah, Microsoft prefers the Senate language.
Microsoft.
That's the Senate language.
IBM likes you.
Yes.
No.
It's not just IBM.
She's thinking.
The whole open source.
I get it.
And actually, what about criteria? I don't know. Mr. Meilenberg, do you want to give us any words that we can...
You've had a couple hours to think of some words here, folks.
What they said is that any room...
Governor Rogers' workshop in the back there.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Meilenberg, any words?
We were talking about whether the committee might want to consider the word requirements. But, I mean, we do feel that standards is probably more consistent with what we... current business practice, but
if we told
to a certain extent, it's a label that is referring to something that sets out requirements for agencies in terms of providing this information to us, which we would provide to the public through an enhanced website.
Requirements is more. I'm more comfortable with the word requirements than policy, for sure.
Is there anybody who's got any concern about the word requirements? Did you have any thoughts,
Mr. Chair? I just wanted counsel advice about why would there be concern versus policy versus standards. We've heard testimony that there's a concern for that, and is there some legal reason for that?
No, it's not a legal issue.
It's
a technical issue which is beyond my comprehension, to be honest with you, but to some people, that the words matter to them. So that's what I'm trying to see. And if we change standards in 912, we'd have to change standards in 913, I think, right?
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, if it's not a legal issue, I guess I would be okay with standards.
You'd be okay with standards? Okay.
You say you picked up one vote over here.
Well...
What's the...
I'm still trying to understand, you know, a standard and a requirement are pretty much the same thing, I think. If you have to meet a certain standard, it's a requirement. But what is the difference then with the policy? I mean, policy is more general, right?
Yes.
Much more
apparently
general.
Apparently there are some people who care about it. Maybe you should ask techies. Mr. Ghana...
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Gopal Khanna. I'm the CIO for the state of Minnesota and head of the Office of Enterprise Technology. OET is the lead agency for the state of Minnesota as it comes to setting up policies, guidelines, and servicing units of government. And standards. Without standards, we cannot build proper systems. As a matter of fact, the challenge before us is that we have a lot of practices that are taking place and makes our environment very dysfunctional and very difficult to manage and maintain. When we build buildings, we think about standards and certain codes. Now, maybe there's a new word to be invented and replaced with standards with maybe code or maybe criteria. I don't know. We'll have to go to the dictionary to determine that. But in the meantime, all that we're talking about standards is to have a standard uniform approach to taking in as much as whether we are building our websites or as it comes to consolidating our data centers. We have 36 data centers, a different subject, but we've got 85 operating systems. We need only 5. There's tremendous amount of redundancies in the systems. There's tremendous amount of difficulty in managing and maintaining them. So this is really a simple issue. The issue is designing the best possible platform for maintaining, securing the citizen data. Government is an information business, and we need robust standards, practices, policies, procedures, best practices, guidelines, all of them. And actually, we use them today. Right now, we are building the finest set of security policies, and we went to NIST COVID, ITIL, these are all standards that have been developed over a period of time, a body of knowledge that we are learning from and incorporating in our approach. So I sincerely believe that having standards is the right thing to do. In no way does it jeopardize anything, but actually establishes the best way going forward for our state.
So you're weighing in on standards. Is that what you're saying?
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, I really do have very limited vocabulary, so I really have to go back and do some research and look at the dictionary to find a better word. But actually, what I'm talking about is exactly what I said, a set of policies, best practices, guidance, standards, procedures, controls, mechanisms, they're all part of coming up with a better design,
Mr. Chair,
which is more uniform, better for the state.
Sir, I'll see.
I think that was a good analogy, maybe better than you realized, about comparison with the building. You build a building to a set of standards. You don't build a building to a policy. It may not fall. It may fall down. So I'm being sold over on this standard. So.
Are there other senators sold over on this standard?
Mr. Chair, I think that also, as we do a little bit of writers workshopping and try to come up with a different language, I think we do have to pay attention to the fact that these are terms of art. And Senator Alcine knows better than anybody what can happen when you get one word wrong. I think with his great work on protecting children riding the Type 3 school buses and having what we thought was plain language turn out to mean very different things to very different people, I think we should be cautious in doing so, as much as I like to think that we're all smarter than we think we should be anyway. But, so with that, move, what are we looking at, section 16, is that what we're looking at, Madam?
We're looking at the House language. It'll be section 16. Then we have to walk. If we adopt section 16 in its entirety, comparing.
Could I ask a question first?
Absolutely, yeah.
If we do standards, are they more proprietary? I'm just trying to figure out why one group would oppose that.
Yeah, who's benefited and who's harmed by choice of the word?
Mr. Chairman, no. In this context, not at all. It is establishing standards of practices, best practices that will be adhered to, guidelines that have been provided, as opposed to just developing and deploying systems willy-nilly and averting the mess that we are in. And going back to what Senator Olsen just said, that yes, from a policy perspective or guidelines perspective, we can say build the most robust system. Now everybody can make their own sense out of it. So everybody follows standards, whatever guidelines they determine right now. But the question is, are they uniform enterprise standards? That's the question. And we have put up many deliberative processes in the agency. And right now we are working with our agency partners to come up with the best practices. So if standards is not the appropriate word, maybe combination of standards and policies. It is basically referring to a set of guidelines that must be used to, in this case, develop this end solution.
Okay, let's see, was there a motion? Galen, did you?
I guess you moved
section 16 of the House language.
We'll take a shot at section 16 on R11, and depending on that vote, then there's more to adopt in the section if we can proceed.
I think then we have to take a look at the whole thing. But as far as section 16, Representative Caleb Lewis, all those in favor of section 16, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed to say no.
No.
Motion prevails. Okay. Now, Mr. Bottom and Mr. Shepherd, we pretty much agreed. I think we've agreed on the concept to accept what we haven't voted on, but I think we were amenable to the House language on the
webmaster because it's optional, or at least OET wasn't opposed to that. It's identical enhanced access to public data, and now we've adopted standards for transparency. What other issues do we have in this area to look at? Mr. Bonner and Mr. Shepherd?
One of the issues I would like to look is the concept of the data center study.
Let's wrap up this webmaster portion before we move on.
Okay. I've gotten messed up on the pages.
Okay. Actually, it's in numerous pages. If you look at the bottom of the comparison, it's the last item down there. And we've pretty much resolved the differences, but there may be some other minor things in here. Mr. Shepherd, Mr. Bonner, maybe you can call them.
Mr. Chair, I think I would suggest that you may want to take a motion on House Section 14, 15, and 16 from pages R9 to R11. And then the other issue that is related to this but doesn't necessarily need to be part of it is on R22, which is the cost recovery issue you were discussing earlier, whether OET would bill executive agencies for any costs in this or not.
Well, I want to hold off on that one, number 33. I'm not quite sure.
That's one more item.
Okay, Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman, on R19, I believe, I'm not sure this is shown, it looks like a subdivision 2 relating to the data center, but if you look on the Senate side on R19, there is what's called a transparency policy report. Just did a report relating to the development of these standards. I think it's written the same way on the House side, although it looks like it's part of that. Yeah.
I agree, Mr. Chair. That is exactly related to this. With the language is the same other than the reference to standards versus policy.
Okay, so if we wanted to adopt the House language on the webmaster, which makes it discretionary, we want to have the enhanced access, and we've already adopted the standards language. Which motion do we make to that part? Not Section 33, however, on the billing part. What motion do we have there? Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chair, I believe the motion would be to adopt House Section 14 and 15. You've already adopted 16.
Right.
And then on page R19, it would be to adopt the House language on 17.7 to 17.15. And we'd put that in the proper format of a section, depending on what else you might or might not adopt.
And give Council the leeway to make it fit, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, is there a motion to that effect? Okay, Tom moves that. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. What else do we have to look at now? I'm not too sure that staying on the OET thing, I'm not too sure that I'm quite sold on the cost recovery and the billing the agencies. I'm happy to talk about that further, but I'm not quite sure on that. Do you have any more information on that?
Mr. Chair?
General Sane.
There's some people from the House here if you wanted to take up the permanent school funds.
Yeah, I'll hear from them. Senator Saxhog advised me that was an issue that they didn't get to this year. He asked me specifically, obviously, you know, this conference committee can do what it wants, but because they hadn't spent any time on it, they wanted the opportunity to delve into it, but they'd have to wait until next year. But that's what was communicated to me. But I see Representative Dietrich is here. She wants to address the conference committee. But, you know, and when I look at the language and so forth, there's not a lot of this has to do with the state government budget area or the state government policy, except the fact that it's tied to the LCC. So, Representative Dietrich, welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you, Senator Betzold, Mr. Chairman, and Madam Chairwoman. I would like to just talk a little bit about the provision of the position of permanent school land management analyst and why it is needed. The House, along with the Senate, have been looking at school trust lands for actually about 3 years, and we have continually asked ourselves the question, is there enough oversight on the management of the school trust lands in regards to keeping costs under control and getting the best benefit to the schools? And so I would just like to emphasize that the House and the Senate have both been on a very steady path of investigating that, along with the initiative that Senator Wieger going up to the lands and actually looking at them. And Senator Wieger did have this bill in the Senate, and they had an informational hearing in the Environment Committee, and then the bill in its present form is now a compromise that was agreed upon in the House. But back to the issue of whether we need a lands management analyst. There are many examples that I could give, but I'm just going to first of all point to the Legislative Auditor's Report of 1997. They said very clearly that the DNR needed better oversight on the management of the school trust lands. They also said over and over again that the Permanent School Advisory Committee, who is supposed to provide the oversight, has not been doing a good enough job doing that. And in fact, in 10 years, they had 10 meetings, and they are the body the committee asked to provide oversight to the DNR. The legislative auditor said that in many different scenarios, that we should be, the school children of this state should be hiring somebody to oversee the DNR and the management of the lands and the management of the funds. And this has been, like I said, the work of 3 years. Everybody who talks about this issue agrees that at least the least that we could do with our school permanent fund is hire one person who oversees the lands and to make sure that they are being managed in an efficient and yet managed in a way to benefit the children of this state.
Well, as I indicated, I'm reluctant to wade in unfamiliar waters, and the more we hear about DNR and school fund lands and so forth that I know absolutely nothing about and has never come up in, you know, the budget division that I chair, I get concerned about it. I see Senator Saxhog has come on in, and perhaps he can weigh in on this too. Senator Rest.
It's a question about
Saxhog, did you want to?
About the language, and I'm not exactly sure what this group is supposed to do. What is on line 215 when a person is supposed to make effective recommendation? What's an effective recommendation as opposed to a non-effective one? What's an effective recommendation? What does that mean?
Mr. Chairman?
What's that mean?
Thank you. When you're talking school trust lands, I think that effective recommendations are pretty clear in trust
What's
law.
What's the word mean?
The word effective would probably would mean decisions or giving advice that benefit the trust fund and benefit the schools, the beneficiaries of the trust fund. Effective is actually pretty clear, because if they were making effective decisions, the trust fund would continue to grow, the dividends to the schools would continue to grow, and the expenses in managing the lands would probably, hopefully, go down, which none of those things have been happening. The management administrative fees for the DNR have gone up 300% in the last 5 years. The trust fund has lost $100 million in the last 3 years. The dividends to the students are, in some people's opinion, paltry.
Senator Saxhog, did you want a thought?
Mr. Chairman, I still don't understand what that word means in that context. I mean, what are the kind of recommendations of what they made? I don't understand why the word effective is even needed, is what I'm saying, as opposed to make recommendations, period.
Well, we've got a bigger issue about it, you know, when we got the jurisdiction on this one, and that's what I'm trying to determine. Senator Saxhog? Did you order?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. All due respect to Representative Dietrich, I think that the management of our school trust lands is very important and will be very important to the future of education. However, this particular idea, as good as it may be, hasn't seen the light of day in the Senate. It hasn't had a hearing in K-12 finance. It hasn't had a hearing in Environment and Natural Resources finance. And to your committee, it hasn't been heard either. So that's the only thing that I'm a little disturbed about, is that we haven't had a chance to discuss it or get into it at all.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Rutland.
Is it? And I'm worried that if the cost of managing the fund has gone up that much, what will we do to reduce that cost if we add another staff person? Doesn't that just add to the cost of managing the fund? And otherwise, I mean, can't they manage within themselves and hire someone like that themselves without us telling them? Or how does that work? We really aren't familiar with this.
The legislative auditor's report is very clear that someone needs to be hired outside the DNR, and actually the Department of Finance has weighed in on that, and many others have also. And this is actually quite from 1997. So this issue has really, the school trust lands became part of our responsibility as a state upon statehood. And that was when the federal government donated, gave the lands to the state. And at that point, we all became trustees. And so since I have been here and I have looked at the management of the school trust lands, I see that there needs to be at least one person who represents the beneficiaries of the trust, and that's the school children of this state. You asked the question about adding to the cost. First of all, I think that there absolutely have to be cost reductions in managing the lands. That's a firm belief. And then the second point that I would make about that is you would hope that if you would hire somebody that you would have to look at the return on the investment. And I will give quickly just the example of the state of Utah. They went to a lands administrator. Their fund had $100 million in it at the time, actually less, and within 15 years they went to $1 billion. So you have to look at the return on the dollar for the person that you hire.
Well, again, there's a lot to be learned about this one, but I don't know that this is the forum for it, Sarah Saxon.
Well, and that's my point. Representative Dietrich knows that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
Not because I think she has the right idea here that school trust lands that are going to be, for instance, mined in the future, the non-ferrous mining is going to be a large percentage of that's going to be school trust lands. So there's going to be more and more money school trust lands that's going to be contributing to the education process is what I'm worried about.
Okay, well, I want to see if there, does the conference committee want to spend any more time on this, or should we move on? I don't see, Representative Winkler.
Oh, Mr. Chair, they're creating this position within the LCC, I believe. Is that who the commission refers to?
That's the only reason why it's in this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems like that would be the reason why it belongs in
this
bill.
Is there a motion?
I'll make the motion, Mr. Chair.
To adopt it?
Yes.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. No. Motion does not prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Division on that one, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, division has been requested. All those in favor, please signify by raising your hands. Those opposed, motion does not prevail. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other issues?
Yes.
I talked to the Department of Administration, and they wanted to bring something up on resource recovery, which actually came after the Senate bill had passed, and it came as a new issue to them, which they did bring to the House's attention, so it would be a new issue. Did the Department of Administration want to talk about this resource recovery issue on recycling? Commissioner Rieger came to talk to you about that one.
The resource recovery.
What's that? I can't hear you. Oh, okay. Never mind.
Okay. Oh, never mind. Okay. Okay. Never mind. Okay, sorry.
That's the R14, not the...
Yeah, I guess we've already not... We've already disposed of that. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Representative Collins.
Did we take it or didn't we?
No, it was not accepted.
No, that was the...
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
It's already been done in Senator Dibble's bill, so we don't need to do that. Okay. That's okay. That's been taken care of in another bill, so we can scrape that off of
Which
here.
One was that?
This was, if you look at the, I'm just looking at the...
yeah, me too.
If you look at the third item down, it says resource recovery. That's already passed in another bill. So we don't need to deal with that in this issue. We'll just talk about it.
Okay.
Okay.
The issue I'd like to bring up again with Mr. Meilenberg and Mr. Commissioner Connor here, is the R19, the state data center.
Study of agreement with nonprofit for centralized data center.
Mr. Connor?
Page R19.
Mr. Chairman, members, although this language is not from the administration, OIT is receptive to it. By way of background, the risks are indeed huge before us. We've talked to you and shared with you the reports that we have received from external consultants showing that we have 36 data centers, literally 34 too many. We have 85 operating systems, we need only 5. We have got data and information all over, which is highly vulnerable to cybersecurity attacks all the time. All our government services, from 911 to public safety services to serving schools and having data and information at all levels of government, resides in some of these data centers, and actually all of them. And it is utterly important that we find ways to consolidate the data centers. So I laud you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Khan, and members for you all being tireless in your effort to figure a way out, to find a way to consolidate data centers. And as we look at what we have over here, we are really receptive to it and appreciate your good effort.
Any questions, Mr. Collins? Well, of course, I think both in the House and Senate government, State Government Budget Division has been spending quite a bit of time on the data center issue, and you know, we looked at the bonding bill and so forth, and I think we recognize, you know, that the need to start taking steps forward to get this thing issue resolved. You know, we took the tour of the facility out at West and saw, you know, what a data. We've been over to the top of the Centennial Building and seen the centers over there, so what's the desire of the members of the conference committee to do so?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this language was drawn up using a model that has been done, and it's very preliminary, so we don't know what we would fully under, using a model that was that has been done very successfully in the state of Washington, and it is, you know, again, in meeting with members of the National Association of State CIOs, it's Minnesota's situation is just uniquely bad. And it's kind of like waiting for the equivalent of the oil spill to occur with the problems, the redundancies, the problems of looking at of data security. And, you know, again, these guys can speak to it much better than I can. But this is a direction that other states are moving in. And this is, again, follows, it suggests we could look at least the model that has been used successfully
in the state of Washington using a specific kind of federal designation that's worked. So,
can I ask a question, though? If you look at on R15 lines, House language 17.3-6, I mean, the first part's a study. I get that part. But then it says, if the Commissioner of Management and Budget and the CIA, Chief Information Officer conclude that any agreement is cost-beneficial, then they have the authority to enter such an agreement, and it says, notwithstanding any law to the contrary. So it goes beyond just studying it. It actually gives them authority to do something, and I'm not quite sure at that point.
What is it?
Really want to do 17.3 or 17.6?
Well, that was the language, that was the point where we put in consulting with the Legislative Advisory Commission. And I know that's an advisory opinion. With the structure of the Legislative Advisory Commission, you and I would both sit on the meeting that decided that, and I think they fully understand that if the Legislative Advisory Commission, so you would have, according, I think it's statute 3.30, you'd have a thorough discussion of it, and I think if that discussion turned negative, they would be well advised not to go ahead with it.
Well, the Legislative Advisory Commission certainly informs an important role, particularly during the legislative interims, but we're talking about a study that's due by next January, and to be honest with you, I would think that the appropriate legislative committees and budget divisions, you know, may want to know the results of that study, and I think they'd be in a perfect position to make a recommendation as to what ought to be doing and not just put this over to the LAC, which, as important as they are, I don't think they've studied data centers as much as our respective groups have. So I'm a little concerned about just authorizing the agreements without having one last review or another review anyway by the appropriate legislative committees that have the expertise in this area. So I guess I'm fine up until 17.2. I'm just concerned about 17.3 and 17.6.
So. Well.
Representative Winkler.
Well, I was going to wait for Representative Kahn to finish her thought.
You know, I had I think again, I certainly want to move forward on this really as fast as we can.
Well, as I say, okay. Well, Sarah Olson, what are your thoughts?
Well, Mr. Chair, I find this pretty interesting. In transportation, we're talking about possible public-private partnerships. And with our tour at Thomson Reuters, if some private company were building a data center like that, would this mean that possibly they could double the size of it and then the state would lease space from them? Is that within the realm of what we're talking about here? Because then we wouldn't have to have the infrastructure to build a $100 or $200 million facility, but we could still be able to use a lease it or something like
What was done in the state of Washington was a little bit more directive, which was they founded a nonprofit corporation which actually built the facility on state property. And then they entered into this lease purchase agreement where they end up owning it after 30 years. Mr. Kanakaba probably can say it a little bit more accurately than I can. But, it's kind of a very elegant way. There's a federal statute that specifically authorizes this kind of agreement between a government and a nonprofit.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, members, the Washington State, we've had a few conversations with them since Representative Kahn brought this language to us, and as we understand it, it's a process which is called the 6320 process based on a decision from 1963 by the IRS. It permits nonprofit entities to issue bonds which are used to either build a new facility or even make upgrades to current facilities. Once they issue those bonds to bondholders, they then lease the facility back to the public entity, and the public entity would repay, would pay the debt service on those bonds. So it becomes a process by which essentially you can provide, get some bonding, some funding in order to build a new center or make upgrades to do investments, as long as you have, you know, a revenue source in which to pay off the debt service. The debt would not be considered state debt, so it wouldn't raise the debt obligations of the state, but the state would be bound by the lease arrangement in order to pay the debt service back.
But the question is, should we be giving you the authority to do it, you know, in this particular bill, just to go ahead and sign the contract after you consult with the LAC, which knows nothing about this stuff, or should we have the opportunity to look at it?
Mr. Chair, understanding Representative Kahn's desire to move quickly and your concern about giving authorization, I wonder if we can delete the sections 17.3 through 17.6, but move up the date of the study so that it's ready in 2010, which would then give time to have some interim hearings and perhaps be ready with an actual piece of legislation for the next legislative session.
Move it up to what?
October
15th, 2010? Mm. Well, the problem, if you think it's
going to fine, September. We'll do September.
No. Well, the trouble is
we won't pay any.
No, until we're going to have an election cycle, believe it or not. And we don't know who's going to be in the next legislature. We don't know what the committees are going to be, who's going to chair them, who's going to be on them. So having any report before mid-January, I mean, you're going to send it to somebody who may or may not be looking at it until January anyway. And we certainly can't do anything until the session starts. So I would really think that it'd be more appropriate. Now, you know, maybe you want to take time off, you know, in the summer to down. I'm not going to do it. So, Senator Olstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House language 16.22 through 17.15, deleting 17.3 through 17.6.
Well, actually, no. The transparency standards are a different thing.
Oh, okay.
It'd be 16.
So 17.2 then.
To 17.2,
yes.
Yeah. On that motion.
Mr. Chair, I just have one question.
And I don't know why this is a foregone conclusion that we have to use state employees. How come that is stated in here twice on 16.28 and 16.29?
Well, what it was, that was put in just as reassurance that we're not moving to the total privatization. We're just looking at the construction of the center. And then the center, and that we're looking at moving state employees into the center. We're not looking at, the concern that was brought was the idea that we're looking at doing what Minneapolis did, which was totally privatize their whole system and send it off to Unisys. And there's a sense that state data ought to be under the control of the state. This doesn't, I don't believe that this precludes at some point, you know, at some point in the future, if there are some more, we're getting, there's another study that we're getting next January on looking at those whole areas. And when we look at that, then we can, you know, then you can decide what the operations are going to be. This is merely dealing with how you're going to do the center.
Mr. Chair, members, we would view the Section C as important. We understand the concerns that you're raising. From our perspective, the situation is this. We've been told almost a couple years ago now that the state is in such a perilous situation that we are going to face 3 to 5 significant failures in the state over the next 5 years. We know that we've had some minor failures to this point. The system at the Department of Economic Development went down for one full day nearly a year ago, the uninsurance system in particular went down for the entire day, which was reported in the press and was a major situation for the state. We have very critical systems that reside on this, including law enforcement, communications, and everything else. This section, Section C, is important because it would allow us to proceed with getting some capital. It wouldn't go so far as to allow us to do anything we wanted, but it would allow us to pursue getting some money in order to start consolidating some of these things into current systems that we have. We already have these data centers. It would allow us to potentially make some upgrades to a couple of them and move our systems in there so we can protect the systems that we have. We view it as an issue of timeliness. The further along we can get as soon as possible is important to the state in order to make sure that these services don't go down. If there's concern about the language, we would suggest that instead of the Legislative Advisory Commission, that it be the chairs of the state government finance committees. I don't know if that is a suitable alternative for you, but to Senator Betzold's point, we think it does maybe bring the body with which we would have to consult back to the body that has been hearing about this issue now for quite some time.
But, you know, if we didn't have this bill, if nothing passed, wouldn't you have the ability and authority, Commissioner Hansen, get the authority to enter into contracts? I mean, we don't approve every single contract that the state enters into. You know, you know, you got to be able to do some things without our saying to do it, can't you, Mr. Lannenberg?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, and we've been working very hard on that, and you know, have made a number of steps in terms of getting things ready. We've prepared a planning steps on how to consolidate data centers. There are some centers that have been consolidated. But the importance of this language is, I would say in terms of paragraph C, is that it allows us to enter into this relationship with a nonprofit for purposes of getting bonding via that route. Whether we have the authority to do that now or not, I'm not probably in a position to say, but as I understood Representative Kahn's language, it was to make clear that we would have that authority if we deemed that there was the appropriate path.
And I'm saying this is language that allows you to circumvent the process. Senator Roebling, or Senator Rolstein, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would renew my motion as it is, because if we come back January 15th with the report, the legislature will be in session. We probably would hear the report and act on it on a very timely manner, because we've all heard and we've made steps to correct the state's computer problems, and so I don't see it as I do have a concern with the agency moving forward without our knowledge or approval on what could be the biggest improvement to our computer system that we've done.
Yeah. Representative Galen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I very much hear your concerns, and yet also think about the infrastructure and the kind of wake-up call we had on the 35W bridge and other items. I'm wondering if we had $1 million for every report that was late, just in my 4 years here, we wouldn't have a budget deficit. And I wonder if we could actually achieve both the motivation to get the report and the study done, as well as have the insulation that you're after, Mr. Chair. There's no language in paragraph C that requires that the MMB commissioner and the CIO actually finish that study before they conclude, because they can conclude based on other reasons that it's cost beneficial. So I wonder if we could require that the study actually be completed explicitly and provide a date no earlier than, say, let's say November 15th, so that we provide an incentive that they complete the study by November 15th,
at the earliest,
again,
and that would trigger the...
If they have a study complete November 15th, who do they send to the legislative process?
Well, then...
We're not organized by then for the next session.
And then, Mr. Chair, that I think that, I don't know if it was you or Senator Alcine or who, or Mr. Mollenberg, who suggested that that we include the chairs. Maybe perhaps it's the LEC plus the chairs.
But again, the current chairs on November 15th may not be the chairs on December 15th, January 15th. You know, so you may be sending a report to somebody who may not have the job much longer. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen next year. Nobody else does. So, anyway. Well, we've got a motion before us. So I'll see this move section 16.22 to 17.2. Discussion of that. Hearing none, all those in favor?
I would certainly suggest we accept that, mm-hmm. and I think we should still work on
sure.
trying to find out if there's some version of
sure.
C that's well, more acceptable.
Let's get that language okay. agreed upon first. All those okay. in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Motion prevails. Now, just further discussion on this or any other point on this area. Any other discussion?
Let's see what else.
Okay, well... I don't know what everybody's
looking at. I don't know. No. Again, it just would be nice to think of some language that would allow some motion forward that would not be...
Well, if a disaster strikes, I don't think we need to have it in session law or statute or anything. You know, I think we do have the LAC, we do have processes on there. Frankly, I think that, you know, if a disaster were to happen, I think the MMB commissioner already has the inherent authority to take whatever steps to do that. We don't approve every contract that happens around here. Now, establishing data centers, that's a bigger issue.
I think what they're interested in is actually acting before the crisis. You know, it's kind of like moving before the 35W bridge came down, as opposed to how effectively everyone moved after it came down.
Mr. Chair, perhaps Mr. Bonner or Mr. Shepherd could answer this question. My understanding is that that you're correct, Mr. Chair, that the lease is a contract that they could enter into, but I'm not sure that they could enter into the lease purchase agreement because it's a little bit of a quirk. I've been carried lease purchase language before. I don't know if if Mr. Bonner and Mr. Shepherd can tell us if we need to grant that authority.
I don't know, but I'm very concerned about entering agreements and having them come to the next legislature and say, well, here's what we've already done. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, why do I need to waste my time to listen to these issues?
I very much hear you.
Yeah. What else do we have, folks?
Well, we do need, unfortunately, we now lost Representative Winkler to the elections bill, but we do have an issue that that he had brought to us on yeah. R22, the mm-hmm. LCC business intelligence section.
Right. I am personally familiar. He's talked to me about this. I've had a couple of issues that I've raised with him, and again, he's not here, but I'll just explain it to you. First of all, if we're talking about the legislature trying to establish a system by which we can develop our own software, how we analyze fiscal notes or get the data, I don't know that we need the governor's permission to do that. The legislature can do things all the time internally to our own processes, and we can work that out between the two bodies and the LCC to figure out how to. However, and I recognize that you spent a bit of time on this, but this has not been vetted, you know, by the Senate staff, and to the extent that the Senate staff has looked at it, they've indicated to me, you know, our chief fiscal analyst, Mr. Mossman, has indicated to me that, you know, he has some strong reservations about proceeding the way that it seems to be set up here. So I'm just saying we've got some concerns on the Senate side
on it, and again, you know, I recognize that Representative Winkler isn't here, but I don't know that, you know, just as it's been communicated to me, and by the way, to our finance chair, Sarah Cohen, he's got some concerns about that too, so I'm just advising you that we need a lot of discussion on that, and I'm not sure we're going to be there. So.
Okay. Let me go to one that may be a little simpler, because mm-hmm. we've done it in a set of bills going through the mm-hmm. budget, and that's R16, Minnesota Science and Technology Authority. This was, I don't know who carried it in the Senate, Representative Mahoney carried it. And this set up an office, an authority for science and technology. And one of the things at one point in the House, we put the CIO, the head of OET, on it, on the grounds that they're going to be using large amounts of technology. You ought to have the one state agency that understands technology on it. And apparently the senators in that conference committee decided that, no, OET is really just a purchasing authority. They're not the technology authority. And so I came up with this language, which we put into several bills. One of the things that I'm concerned about, particularly when anyone is doing something that's totally private and yet wants to have connections with the state information system, and this was in a bill that Representative Bunn had that went through Deed, where there was going to be a website that connected to all the state websites. It was in one of Representative Huntley's bills. I'm not sure if it's a passed bill or a bill that's still under discussion, where they were talking about health electronic information. And again, in all, and so it's a very simple thing on R16. It just says that if they use information systems that connect to the state information system, then they're subject to OET jurisdiction. Part of that jurisdiction is accessibility, security, and things like that. So it's Mr. Meilenberg is here.
Well, and if this is the issue that I think Sarah Saltzman had something, but it started going through the process and then stopped, and I'm not entirely sure what happened along the way, but
it's a bill that's passed, I believe.
Which omnibus?
Economic development.
Oh, the economic bill. So you think that this language may already be in there?
No.
Oh, no.
The authority.
The language is
the authority.
The authority is in it. The authority has passed.
Okay.
Has been signed. But all this says is just that if it impacts state information systems, then it's also subjected to the standards and the jurisdiction of OET.
Okay. Mr. Meilenberg?
Mr. Chair, members, I'd be glad to comment on it. As the bill has gone through the Science and Technology Authority Act, I think it was included in the Representative Obermuller, and I'm sorry, I think it's Senator Sparks who was the companion. It was an omnibus bill that contained a number of Deed and Dolley provisions, Department of Economic Development and Labor and Industry provisions. It also included what was called the Science and Technology Authority Act, which created a new entity called the Minnesota Science and Technology Authority. From OET's perspective, it seemed to us that the legislation was trying to do good things, but it was creating a new entity related to technology, and we weren't exactly sure of what the bounds of the authority were. And from our perspective, we think it's a good idea that if there's going to be a new technology entity, even though it may be facilitating monies to the private sector, that to a certain degree that it consults with us if its activities would impact state systems. Obviously, this committee and OET have worked very hard in order to set up a program related to security. We think if there are other activities sanctioned by the state that are creating new entities and potentially impacting state systems, that we should have an idea of what they're doing so we can provide our input and guidance and oversight to them.
Okay, questions? Anybody else want to be heard on this issue?
Okay.
So I move this language.
Okay, Representative Kahn moves the language. It actually, it looks like it starts on R15, it sounds like, at least the head note. It would be section 23 of the House language. Is that what it is? Yep. Section 23 of the House language. Discussion of the motion. For no, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Motion prevails. Do we have anything else to come before us? I think we're getting down to the end here. While we're looking it over, is there anybody else out there who's got anything they want to bring to our attention on this conference committee? Any issues that we may have overlooked, anything that you want to bring to our attention? Because we're getting towards the end here.
Chair.
So I'll see.
On the first page, R4, the Heritage Fund and LCCMR data mapping.
I was actually about to talk about that one.
Okay, that's a House-only provision. I don't know what it does. Can somebody explain that?
Yeah. I can explain. Okay. This was actually in the House, originally in the House Appropriations Bill. It was decided not to be sufficiently fiscal.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to understand what this does is to go to the website of Min Recovery and to look at what was done with the ARRA money and look at the kind of maps that were available from that. It's just incredible. And it was kind of interesting if anyone who was on that oversight committee, because when we said we wanted this to be done, they first said they couldn't do it, and then we said just go ahead and do it, and they did it. And those maps are just spectacular in terms of the kind of information that you get on the subject, on where things are, and everything. And things like that. It's obvious that some of these map data things might be a little difficult. So that's why it was backed off and made this more permissive. Say may, if practicable, made available. But again, if we're trying to move towards greater transparency and greater public information, this is just a very, very good way to make things really available to the public. And we put, one of the things is, we did do something of this last year that we went to the LCC, and the LCC contracted with the people who do the redistricting mapping. And, you know, so there's not an attempt to double fund this, but it's an attempt to make sure that they start working with the people who have really good geographic information.
It appears to be permissive,
it's permissive.
And there's, so there's no cost, is it?
No.
Okay. Anybody want to be heard on this issue?
Is it no cost because it says may?
Well, it's also because they're already working. You know, a lot of what you have has already been done. And if you go back and you look at last year's legacy bill, there was a mapping component of that, which is being coordinated by the LCC. So it's, you know, so there's, you know, there's no cost until you, and because we've already done it with the ARRA. You know, when you say no cost, it might be just of such minimal cost to each thing that it doesn't count. And the reason why it's permissible is if in order to do this, there is a cost that can't be met through the ordinary budgets of MGO and then the LCC mapping function and so forth, then, you know, they don't have to do it. So that's why all the language was put in like the may if practicable. But if you just look, you know, again, that was done without additional, the Minnesota mapping of the ARA funds was one of the, I think it was the fourth best in the country. So they've already done, I mean, a lot of the stuff that you need to do this has already been done. terms of putting the basic software together and that sort of thing. But, and we made it permissive because in case there are things that for some reason this is more complicated and so forth, then the answer is it's not practicable and they'll come back and tell us how you do it and how you fund it.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Roblin.
I like the idea because it lets the public know where the money is going.
If you looked at that map, you'd love it.
I just am hoping that, but I guess that they don't have to do it if they don't have the money.
It looks permissive to me.
Yeah.
There are some other things, some other information. You know, again, I backed off on, I think when we looked at this at the committee, the first thing was we should do every bit of the budget this way. And then they said, you know, we've got to do things one at a time. State of Maryland did it. You can look at that on the web, too. They did a spectacular map of their capital budget, you know, using these kinds of techniques. So it's not developing a whole new thing. We think it's possible, but we put the wimp out words in case it isn't.
Okay, any further discussion? Are you moving the language?
Yes, I'm moving.
Okay. So Representative Kahn moves the language in the House language of Section 7, beginning on page R4. Discussion and motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, motion prevails. Anything else we have come before the conference committee?
Representative Winkler is here if he wants to.
Representative Winkler? Did you want to discuss it? You and I have had a private discussion about your LCC business intelligence. What I shared with the conference committee is the fact that I agree that we have to do a better job at getting fiscal information, not relying just upon fiscal notes from the executive branch. And I think that there's some ideas in here for analyzing some business intelligence. However, first of all, I don't know that we need to put in session laws or statute something to tell the legislature what it can and cannot do, because if we wanted to do it, we could do it internally. More importantly, though, our own Senate staff, Mr. Mossman, has indicated that he's raised some issues and he's talked to Senator Cohen's talked to me, and we're not quite sure that the Senate is quite ready on it. But obviously, this is an issue you've worked on, so please go ahead and educate us on the issue. So I know a little bit about it within the conference, but go ahead.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Business intelligence software is something that's widely used in the private sector and it's typically not, obviously there's no private sector equivalent to a legislature. It's usually an executive office that has a wide-ranging enterprise, and they use business intelligence software to be able to effectively analyze and track resources across a broad spectrum of a business. The concept of using it in a legislative body is simply that while we can access theoretically accounting and procurement data in state government, often we are dependent on asking a question, getting an answer back, and having it be basically kind of a static back and forth lob approach to this, getting information. Business intelligence tools allow you to not do anything to the data except to access it, and then the tools basically sit on top of the data and allow you to query the data, manipulate it, and compare it in interesting and unique ways that may be helpful to in this case, the legislature. And Mr. Chair, I understand that people maybe haven't bought into this entirely, but I thought that if we, the language here on 18.2 says, or a request for proposals, I wondered if we just struck that language and simply did an RFI to see what might be out there that could aid us in better being able to analyze and get a meaningful vision into the accounting procurement database at MMB, and if we took that RFP language out, maybe it's a little bit of a softer buy-in for folks.
Well, Representative Winkler, if I wasn't told that I had to wrap this bill up a half hour ago, which I was, we'd probably have a little bit more time to talk to, you know, because this does affect Senate staff. And they, as I say, they've had some concerns. I don't know that I could just take an amendment like this and commit the Senate staff to something that they, you know, still have reservations about. So, and as I say, we're running really up against a deadline where the revisor may not be able to guarantee we get this conference committee report in time by tomorrow morning. So I don't know if I've got the time to circle back to our people and say, you know, what do you think about this language? It is something, however, again, because it's internal to the legislature, whether we pass this or not, if it's something that, you know, the Senate staff and the House staff, you know, wish to do, we can do it. We don't need it. We don't need to give ourselves permission to do it this way. We can still do it. So, I understand where you're coming from. You're saying, you know, if it's on the books, that gives you a little bit more impetus. But
it helps to align resources. When
maybe a session law, but you know, I think that I, you know, but resources is a big issue, obviously, within both legislative bodies and the LCC right now too, and you know, what's the cutting. And I'm not sure, but I certainly agree with you. We got to have a we're never going to have a legislative budget office as the Congressional Budget Office has, but I think that you're on the right track, that we need to have a better access to our own use of the data, the fiscal data, so we can make our decisions, not just have kind of fiscal notes coming at us.
Right.
And we all have one of those at some point. So.
Right. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess my goal here is to give us a tool that is cost-effective. Not, you know, to my knowledge, and I've done some research on this, no legislature in the country currently has a suite of tools that allows them to do this. So that's why, for me, an RFI, and these are the appropriate committees, I think, to say that this is an important issue, who've tracked this. And it's a way for the committees to indicate to the legislature as a whole that we need a better access, and without creating a whole bureaucracy or hiring a bunch of new people to do it. This is just an opportunity to explore what may be out there. And so I guess, Mr. Chair, if you're... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I'm, you know, as I say, I'm reluctant to put it in the bill, but on the other hand, you know, over the interim, you know, to the extent that I'm down here, I'd be happy to work with you and Mr. Mossman, Senator Cohen, and, you know, the folks from... And bring the LCC involved, because they may have some issues here, too. And I think this is something that, you know, it's a nice project that we can work, our staff can be working on, and, you know, figure this, you know, what we need to do on it. And if Mr. Mossman did say it's possible down the road we might need some legislative authority to get past firewalls and so forth, you know, where you know, that they have that in the system, but he's not sure quite ready to go there yet. But as I say, it's a topic that does merit discussion, absolutely. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't see the harm in putting it in here, then.
Well, I'm just relying upon my chief fiscal analyst, who says, I've got real concerns about this.
And
I have to rely upon our staff here, too, when they tell me, be cautious. So.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a cautious approach, especially if we strike the language on the RFP. So I guess if it's in order, I would move adoption of Section 34 while striking on line 18.2 or a request for proposals.
Yeah. All right, we've heard the motion. There's a discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We'll say no. No. Motion prevails. Okay, anything else?
Mr. Chair, one item on page R19, it's the heading is under government efficiency and transparency studies. I know that last year this conference committee passed on Representative Kahn's sale of naming rights piece, and I think as we're looking at outsourcing and contracts, just working with Mr. Shepherd here, we would add a new subdivision here that says MMB in consultation with the university must report to the legislature by January 15th of 11 on the costs and benefits of changing the name of TCF Bank Stadium to Veterans Memorial Stadium.
And I
is this new language here somewhere?
This would be.
This is language related to the bill.
It's related to the bill, and I'm just going to raise the issue, not move the language, but and I know we need to wrap up here, but as we look at outsourcing and look at the contracts that the state does enter into and state-related institutions, I did talk to Mr. Yoakum from MMB, and I think he recognized that there's an issue here, but that the cost-benefit study is a specific study that requires resources. So I'm not going to offer it, but I do think that, though this is my last couple of days here, I do think it's an issue the legislature needs to pay very careful attention to, especially this group, about a $30 million contract with $70 million benefits for the entity. So
TCF did pay for some naming rights, but what if, say, Grain Belt wanted to pay for some naming rights, as an example? I think there's some issues that have to resolve before that would ever happen about beer in the stadium, but...
I understand, Mr. Chair, actually, that while we were down here, the House passed an issue related to that, but for instance, I think if we do the Grain Belt Brewery Stadium, that we should be careful about if there's $10 million paid for a $30 million value of exclusivity, that it's one of the things that this committee specifically should watch for to make sure that we're not giving away the barn or the stadium or other opportunities. So thanks for indulging me my last couple minutes, but an issue that's very, very dear to my heart. I know to yours, given that you served in uniform.
Yes, well, I mean, the Memorial Stadium was a memorial built for World War I veterans, and they tore it down anyway.
One last motion, Mr. Chairman.
Hello?
Question.
Does it have anything to do with pension commission?
That's
no.
Hey.
No.
I'm waiting. No. I assume you're keeping the bill open to see if you need to put.
Well, I got to find out if the governor signed it.
Oh,
An hour and a half.
Okay. I would like to bring to our attention the repealer in Section 37 on R22 of the tax bill. Of this bill. It has to do with...
No. You probably are trying to get a repealer of the tax bill.
No.
I was on that conference committee.
Oh, you were on that one that passed that?
Yes, I was.
Oh, my gosh. And you voted for it?
And Representative Krenke and Senator Porgemiller both agreed that a tax is a fee and a fee is a tax for way different reasons, but they did, okay? And Senator Porgemiller, I pointed out that this was in the bill. I just let him know. And he let me know that if I come back from conference with that repealer in, this bill will not be taken up for a vote. It's a Senate file. Okay?
You won't see it.
He feels very strongly that this ought to remain. Now, you can make a motion, and we can put it in
actually,
here.
Actually, this is a separate way. If we look at this is a separate way it could be done, which were to appeal to Senator Pogemiller. If we look at the language of the repealer, look at the language that we're trying to repeal, which is that not in the it's in the bill itself. Mm-hmm. If you look at 65.44, it goes through the... And as I recall, Mr. Chairman, you once did vote. We once did have a conference committee, which this was in, and I think that...
And do you remember what subsequently happened?
Okay. I thought that you would be smart enough this time not to bring it to the attention of Senator Pogemiller.
I learned my lesson.
Then he might be too busy to discover it now, because he has more things to worry about in this last day.
But there are certain things that he just doesn't forget, okay?
Well, I know anything that's a Pogemiller Krenke.
I am.
Krenke combination. But this is the other direction that should be taken then. Is if you look at the language in the repealer, the last thing, look at the language in statutes, the last thing it says, this subdivision is not intended to extend or limit Article 4, Section 18 of the Minnesota Constitution. That's the one that says that every bill that has a tax has to originate in the House.
And that language was suggested by me.
What this is the equivalent of doing, mm-hmm. of doing is the same thing that we do in our budget process. where we don't count inflation on the outgo, but we do count inflation as it comes in, as we're doing our revenue forecast. And it makes, you know, I'm sorry, I'm married to a mathematician, so one of the things I get to expect is balanced equations. And so this one makes no sense, because in the first part of it you say that a tax is a fee, and then in the second part of it you say, but a tax really isn't a fee. And it's just like the two inflation ones.
What is it?
Well,
but anyway, I would just feel that I wasn't doing my job if I didn't move that repealer to this conference committee.
And I've told the I talked to Senator Bordenberg, not on this issue, but I did tell him, I said, well, I'm going to be going to conference committee with Representative Kahn very soon, and I said, now just be aware that, okay, I'll be civil, okay. However, I said, you have to understand something, though, that although we have our disagreements, you have to understand, Mr. Majority Leader, that if we can do something to ruin your day, both of us are very happy, right? And we agree upon that. Okay? But not this. But not this. So, Representative Kahn has moved the killer amendment to this bill, which
just
basically means
the guts of the Senate.
Will never be taken up on the Senate floor if this passes members. On that motion, think about what you're doing. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
No. Motion does not fail.
Are you going to call division?
Mr. Chair?
No.
You misheard him.
It was a question.
I'd like to move the conference report.
Well, that's...
Oh, that's your job?
Yeah. I think...
Usually say most freshmen by the end of the first year. I think freshmen.
No, 4 years. We get 4 years.
First termer. Any news?
No, I haven't heard.
We just want this poll. Just not put it.
Okay.
I guess so. Fiscal.
Okay, anything else that any House member wants that we've neglected to?
Other than Veterans Memorial Stadium, I think we're set.
Okay, Representative Kahn moves then that Senate I always check with counsel, Mr. Bonner, Mr. Shepard.
I was going to check this again with Mr. Shepard. I'm not sure we have an appropriation left in the bill. And since we don't, I think we want everything in here to be effective July 1st. What you should probably instruct staff to do is to supply a general effective date of July 1st, 2010, unless otherwise specified.
Oh.
The council moves. Discussion and motion. Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Anything further to come before the conference committee? Seeing none, Representative Kahn moves that Senate File 3134, as amended by this conference committee, be adopted as the conference committee report. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, say no. Motion prevails. The conference committee report is adjourned. Thank you.